Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
A mock lynching at a Dartmouth furniture store has already resulted in the firing of two of the people who work there and sensitivity training for the other employees. But politicians and members of the black community say it may still not be enough. CTV's Ron Shaw has more tonight.
Racist threats and the mock lynching of a statue were reported to the Nova Scotia Human Rights Commission by a former employee of this Leon's furniture store in Dartmouth. Today, customers expressed their concern.
Very surprised. Shouldn't happen at all. Yeah. The white people, the black people were all the same.
No one from Leon's was available to speak to us today, but two workers were fired over the incident. Employees are getting sensitivity training, and there have been apologies.
The NDP government also says that what happened is completely unacceptable and that everyone should feel safe in the workplace.
Those kinds of incidents are unacceptable in today's Nova Scotia, that we all have a duty to show to Nova Scotians that we will stamp out incidences of racism when we see them.
Tracy Williams of the Nova Scotia Human Rights Commission can't talk about an ongoing case, but she says that in cases of wrongdoing, the law provides consequences.
Damages. They can include monetary awards for lost income. They also can include ordering employees and employers to participate in human rights education and training.
It's not racism.
Take a look. A photo of what looks like a noose. A person who says they are an Amtrak employee here at the 30th Street offices say this picture was taken on Halloween.
This is a gross ignorance at its best.
Barry Morris is the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League. For more than 100 years, they have fought to stop the defamation of Jewish people and secure justice and fair treatment for all.
Suppose someone says, well, yes, it was a joke.
This is not a joke. This is not a joke in the same way that putting a swastika in front of a Jew is not a joke.
What would be your reaction to see this at your workplace?
I would be scared to death, and I definitely would follow up with a supervisor or someone, maybe call some authorities, because that's pretty serious.
I would report it. I mean, that's unheard of.
I contacted Amtrak for comment. The company released a statement saying, in part, upon learning of this incident, management immediately launched an internal investigation. Amtrak also says they have a zero tolerance policy for harassment and discrimination in any form.
We're not seeing any noticeable decline in acts of bigotry and prejudice. African Americans still are the largest class of people who are victims of hate crimes.
Now, just moments ago, Amtrak contacted me to say they have now completed their investigation and determined the incident was a sports-related joke. And the employee who placed the noose in the office will be disciplined. Amtrak also says management will meet with employees next week to discuss the incident. The company also says anti-discrimination and harassment training will be conducted. The company says they have a zero tolerance for discrimination and harassment of any kind.
It's not racism.
Now, a noose with a note attached that read termination notice. That's what a black woman who works for the Washington County Housing Department found one day last month on an office cubicle, and now she's taking action.
This is 2014, and a supervisor's bringing a noose to work, and nothing's being done about it.
The outrage is clear in Vanessa Savage's voice. First came the noose and then a county investigation that failed to punish the supervisor who put it up. So Savage has hired an attorney and is weighing legal action to force an outside probe.
The noose is designed to terrorize people, and there's a historical precedent that that's what the noose does. And when you put a noose on a note that's saying terminated, fired, he wanted it to have a certain impact, and it did.
Savage took a leave of absence right after the noose incident, but she has since returned to work. She says it's a hostile environment. The county investigation found the noose was not racially motivated and recommended employees undergo sensitivity training.
It's not racism.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, September 13th, 2015, so I have been told. We should be back in 2 days on Tuesday, September 15th. The report for people who've been listening to the program last weekend, the compensatory call-in, we ended with the segment from the Washington Post, black female. She did her piece where she was talking, unfortunately, about the white male that she was in some sort of tragic arrangement with before, and then finding out down the road the white man that she thought was really, really cool is racist. She should be with us Tuesday evening, normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Everyone's favorite area of people activity, Area 8, on Tuesday. In the meantime, workplace racism, I've consistently stated, a very important area of discussion, something that we should be talking about, reflecting on, making notes, trying to get as much information as possible, because so many of us consistently are having difficulties on the job, not getting promotions that we have earned, not getting our raises, even struggling just to keep the job that we have, much less moving up to a better position, higher pay grade, and all of that good stuff. We every weekend, compensatory call-in, last segment of the program is workplace racism, where folks call in and share their observations, what they've seen, problems that they're having, even if they have figured out some things that work well, when you codify some things to say or some things to do that help you solve problems on the job. That is every weekend, and I just hope that this program is another reminder for folks to make sure that we understand how serious racism, white supremacy is. Even if things are going great on your job, that can change in a heartbeat. You just want to be very serious, very prepared about your job, have that manual so that you know the rules, and even look out for some of the other literature that can give black people tips on things to do, things not to do in the workplace. But definitely have in mind, it is a dangerous environment if you are a black person, non-white person, on the whole. Our broadcast for today, last year, there was great reporting. We talked consistently about the importance and tradition of black journalism. The great folks at San Francisco Bay View, they did outstanding reporting covering the workplace racism incident that we're going to discuss today. Mr. Al Osorio, he started back in the summer, gave a great report kind of going over what was some of the problems that our guest today that he was encountering on his job. We were able to get this individual on the program to kind of go over some of the things he was dealing with and things that had been happening for about a year on his job. Mr. Osorio with San Francisco Bayview updated, got us new information on what's transpired over the last year with our guest, even context of white supremacy. Kat referenced in the report, which really caught my eye, because it seems that some of the white people, some of the white colleagues, that they might have heard our broadcast from last year. We followed up, had him on. It was a great conversation. I think a lot of people Got some good notes, good things to ponder on and keep in mind as they move forward in their own careers. But thought it would be great to have him back on the program just to get an update, see what has transpired, and see if we can learn anything, if this can be fruitful for us as we continue to deal with racism, white supremacy, and specifically on the job. Real pleasure to have him back on the program, and hoping we get great details about what he has been dealing with. Joining us live from the Bay Area, Mr. Daryl Washington. Mr. Washington, are you with us, sir?
How you doing?
I'm hanging in, but we are glad to have you back on the program after a year to get the update. Just glad you could share a bit of your Sunday afternoon with us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, for sure, for sure. For listeners who haven't seen the reporting, it should be linked. If you're at Black Talk Radio Network, you can just go to sfbayview.com. You can see San Francisco Bayview. Great website. They have tons of great information on racism, white supremacy. And then this article specifically is linked. It was posted in June of this year, and they have links to the reporting that they did last year. For any of our listeners, we want to give kind of the update, what's transpired this year, but just anybody that didn't hear the program from before, anything that you think that they should know about you briefly before we get started?
Well, basically, last year in July, I believe it was, I was on the show, and we went over a few things that had happened in December of 2013, where a white coworker placed a noose, hung up a noose in the workplace, and all that has transpired after that, being denied medical attention, me filing a DFEH, Department of Fair Employment and Housing, claim for retaliation, applying for other jobs, or pretty much, you know, with a few other things that happened with HR, you know, basically denying and saying that, you know, they've done all they can do to this white coworker. The union getting involved and saying that there was nothing else that they could do, or that they would do, I should say, to discipline the white coworker. So that is somewhat of a quick backdrop of what transpired back on our last time I was on the show in July 2014.
Right on. So we will catch folks up again. You can go back in the archives if you want to hear that broadcast. That also should be linked in the description. And again, it was July 2014. If you dig back in the archives, you can check it out, and you'll be all up to date. So 2015, and I think kind of where we had left things off, the noose incident, I think that had happened at the end of 2013. You talked about some other incidents where you felt that you did not get proper training, which led to some problems on the job. That didn't get rectified. This white person, we have a name now, John, is it Perlota? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Peralta.
So John Peralta, yeah. Suspected racist. So he puts this noose on another black employee's bags. Down, he doesn't get fired for that. He gets like a 6-day suspension. Down the road from that, he throws a Jet magazine, which folks who don't know is a black news publication. So he throws this Jet magazine at a black employee. He doesn't get fired for that. I think he reported that the Recology management, who was responsible for disciplining Mr. Peralta, that they combined these incidents as opposed to these being two separate infractions. This got all put together as one incident of incorrect behavior that should possibly lead to termination. So that was one thing that worked in his favor to kind of keep the suspected racist on the job. As this continued, you were just being stressed by being there, having to continue to work with him. And they're just saying, hey, I don't even understand what the big deal is. I mean, it's all fun and games. We're a big family here. Mr. Peralta, he's one of your brothers here at Recology. We can all just get along. You're stressed, right, upset about this. And you injured yourself as well. Not proper training. You got injured, taking some time off. They weren't really receptive to getting you the treatment that you felt that you needed to get your health back so you could get back on the job. And in addition to them not dealing with the racist abuse that you were having to encounter. And I think that was kind of where things, where we kind of left off at, where it was just kind of, where is this going to go from here in June 2014?
Right.
July, excuse me.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, let me, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so what happened after that, they basically called me into a meeting. I actually sent them a link to all of the news stories, and also I sent HR, Kathy Jamison and Varessa Scott, I sent them links to the show, Cows, Context of White Supremacy, that I was on in July, 2014. And we had a few meetings that kind of went back and forth. They didn't understand, for one, why I filed a retaliation with the DFEH claim. And I went through that whole entire thing and explaining to them, as I was called into a meeting with HR with both Kathy Jamison and Varessa Scott, I explained to them what was going on, what had happened, why I did not, not understanding why I didn't receive promotion, and in me not receiving promotion from four different positions that I had applied for, that was the reason that I had to move to file a DFEH claim, because it was mighty suspicious that, one, I was not allowed to, you know, be promoted after the incident that happened in December 2013 with the noose and me reporting it. And what transpired after that, me having issues at work, you know, not being able to work, they didn't understand, you know, fully. So I called them and let them know, hey, maybe we should meet so we could sit down and talk about it. And that time in us talking about it, they still didn't understand fully what was going on. They didn't realize that, you know, now they kind of, Varessa Scott at first, she was like, you know, this is unacceptable, you know, but of course, being, you know, HR and not being in charge, and also being in charge of a company, HR department, which is corporate, you know, she had to go along with whatever they have going on. She couldn't just step up and say, hey, you know what, I think this is wrong. Kathy Jamison could have done the same thing. It came to my attention in one of these meetings that another HR person, whom is a white woman, came up and said that they should have fired John originally when the noose had happened. But that never happened. I don't know why. I don't know who called and said, don't do it. I don't know. But this is the word that I got in some of these meetings that we had had at Recology, where I heard that this white HR lady said that they should have fired it. I'm just going to say how she said they should have fired his ass, because that was unacceptable. Transpiring after that, I ended up going out on medical, and me going out on medical for the incident of having anxiety, and also not being able to work, having stress, and whatnot. I went out per their request. After I had went to my own doctor and filed workers' comp claim, or tried to file a workers' comp claim, they called me into the office 2 days later and told me that I had to go see their doctors now. I was denied. I think in July 2014, I did express that I was denied by 8 different people that were associated with management at Recology, denied medical treatment or medical, anything to do with medical. They, oh, no, you'll be fine. Oh, no, we don't, you know, we can't open up a case behind that or whatever. So eventually, after I took it upon myself to go see my own doctor, they called me into the office and tell me I have to go see their doctors. As I go see their doctors, I was taking off of work for 2 months. And this is after I had already met with HR, explained to them what was going on, what was happening, the issues I was having. At that time, they still didn't take me off for workers' comp. So eventually, as I came back and I saw Glenn Lidecker, who is the Recology SF safety manager, I see him and he's playing as if he doesn't know anything about this situation. And I had to just call him a liar, because I told him originally, he was one of the original 8 that I expressed that I was having anxiety and having stress-related issues behind them keeping John Peralta and having me work with John Peralta. Their doctors, as I go see their doctors, we don't know anything about that, whatever. Okay, fine. I go to see their doctors. As I go see their doctors are just appalled. They couldn't believe that this actually had just happened, and the fact that they denied me being able to go see a doctor. They sent me to a psychologist. And as I go to the psychologist, he's telling me that basically they're going to take me off of work for 2 months per his request, because I was going through so much, you know, issues in terms of not being able to breathe, stress, and just some of the things that we talked about, me and him. He was like, no, you don't need to be in that environment. It's a hostile environment. And I totally agreed with him. And the 2 months I was taken off, I was denied workers' comp through the company because when I filed the paperwork with John Lidecker, this one day that they called me and 2 days after I went to go see my own doctor, I had to post-date the time that I was going through the stress, which started back in December. Now, this is where it gets tricky. In December, I had only been at the company as a material handler for about 2 months. I didn't pass my 90-day probation. If you don't pass your 90-day probation, from what I understand, you're not able to get workers' compensation. But yet, I didn't file the workers' compensation until, what was it, June? I believe it was June/July-ish, 2014. So I was denied 2 months of pay, which I didn't receive any pay, and I didn't understand how this was even possible. I filled out the paperwork while I'd already passed my 90-day probation, but yet since I had to pass post-date it back to when it actually had happened, I was denied the workers' comp. So I didn't have any money coming in. I expressed this to HR. She said that she would look into it. They denied the claim. They told me that the best thing that I could do was go get state disability. I don't know if anyone knows or if any other states are like California. California is so backed up and backlogged. I didn't receive any kind of pay for those times, that time that I was off, for months. When it came in, it was great, but I didn't receive anything for months. I finally go back to the job. They finally moved me from working with John Peralta. Now I'm working at a day shift in a position that most people who have been there for years, 10, 15 years or so, they get these positions at this early day. So I go to this position, and as I'm there, I'm back and forth talking to HR. Well, HR decides, Kathy Jamison decides to call somebody who I guess she considers a friend, who is Keith Jackson, who Keith Jackson is currently right now still fighting a case. I believe he's still fighting a case that's involving Senator Leland Yee for corruption and weapons trafficking and a whole bunch of other stuff. As she contacts him, he contacts me. I actually met with Keith out front of my house, and we talked, and he told me that they have a deal, and he told me to take the deal. Now, his cousin, which is Philip Taylor, which I don't know if you remember, Gus, he was on the show last time, and he was the gentleman who said that he didn't fear any man, or he didn't fear anybody, and especially white people. I don't know if you remember that. But that was Philip Taylor. So he gets involved in it, and as he gets involved, he's telling me, hey, look, man, just, you know, we're going to try to work out something. Now, I'm still sitting there trying to wrap my fingers around, why are these two individuals involved in something that I have going on, and they're not even part of the company? Not employees, none of that. So eventually, as I speak to Phil Taylor, he tells me that basically, you know, I talked to Kathy, you know, we sat down and we worked out a deal. What are we going to do? We're going to, you know, they're going to offer you $50,000. They're going to offer you a driving position, which means I'll be back in a truck driver. And also, I don't even know where this came from, but I'd be offered a full basic scholarship to a culinary academy. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. I don't know where that came from, but okay, let's talk. And I explained to him that $50,000 still was enough and that what I had on the table originally was I wanted an apology. I wanted policy change. Money wasn't even on the table originally when I met with Kathy Jamison prior to this meeting that they were trying to set up with me. We set this meeting up to happen on a Saturday in September 2014. As we set this meeting up, we were supposed to go to breakfast at the Courtyard Marriott or somewhere that was in the area close to where I live at, which is in Emeryville, California. As this meeting was being set up that morning, I don't know who was late, or I believe we were on time. I think Kathy was late. Something like that had happened. We weren't able to go to Courtyard Marriott in Emeryville to eat breakfast. So across the street is a P.F. Chang's. At the P.F. Chang's, we all sit down, we're talking, and we're, you know, basically talking about politics and stuff that had nothing to do with what I was really here for. I wanted to get to the meat of it so we can go ahead. I can either say, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. This is what is not going to happen. This is how it's going to happen. And I'm going about my day. I already know how the company, you know, acts at this point. They're very arrogant, and they don't really care about doing what's really, in my opinion, what's right. So we sit down. We sit there for about an hour talking about just nothing. eating food and whatnot. So at the end of this hour, I finally get up and say, hey, you know, can we get to the meat of this? What do, you know, what are we talking about? Let's get to it. Kathy Jamison comes out her mouth and says, well, the deal that's on the table is we will give you $50,000, but you will have to resign and we'll be done with it. I looked at her and I said, no, that's not the deal. I said, what you would have to do is add another zero to that $50,000, making it $500,000, and we could possibly talk. She tells me at that point, well, we're not going to give you $500,000. We're not even going to give you $200,000, and $50,000 is the deal. Take it or leave it. I told her, I said, well, I guess I'll be leaving it. $50,000 is nowhere near enough if you all want me to quit as a deal to leave the company. And then she tells me, well, we're not going to pay you anything and let you stay here. In which I returned and said to her, that sounds good, but if a judge or a jury tells you that this is what's going to happen, that's what you'll have to do. Arrogant again, she kind of just looks like, yeah, whatever. Towards the end of this, we're getting ready to walk out. Of course, she's very irritated at this point because she expected me to take this $50,000 and walk away, which I told her no. She's getting ready to walk out. I'm getting ready to walk out with Philip Taylor. I asked Kathy Jamison, so since you all don't want me here, does that prevent me from being promoted? Can I still be promoted, or should I still continue to look for promotion in the company? She said, not only do we not want you here, oh no, I'm sorry. She said, not only will you not ever be promoted based off of the fact that you did what you did, which is call the DFEH and create a big fuss about all this, and of course, including yourself contacting other media and being on COWS, that I would never be promoted. But she said that we don't even want you here, but we know we can't fire you because that would be against the law. And I said, even if I'm qualified, I can't be promoted. She gave me one of those looks like, yeah, you know what it is. Not at all. It'll never happen. At that point, she walks out. Me and Phil walk out. We go on about our day. I look over at Phil. I ask him, like, man, did you hear what she just said? I'm like, she just basically said in so many words that they're retaliating against me because of what I did. I can never be promoted. That's retaliation. So at that point, go home. You know, I'm thinking about all that just transpired. I contacted my lawyer, Stanley Goff, and explained to him what was going on. And at this point, I wanted to go ahead and file a lawsuit because I felt like there was no way of really dealing with this company. They wanted to be arrogant. They didn't want to work on, you know, the relations and trying to make things right. So the hell with it. Let's just go ahead and sue. At that time, my lawyer, Mr. Goff, went ahead and filed a suit with the federal court. In federal court, he only filed a suit for discrimination. And this all happened. They got served by the sheriffs here in San Francisco, or in San Francisco. They got served by the sheriff with the federal lawsuit, which was for discrimination. I've been to court a couple times in 2015 for that issue, but I did get hurt at the end of, in September, the end of September, sometime middle of September, I got hurt on the job again with another wrist injury. Now, I don't know if anyone who was listening before remembers, I did get hurt originally when I first started with the company early 2013, which the driving manager, safety manager told me that I'm fine, gave me a few wrist brace, and told me to go on about my day. Now, the same injury that I'm suffering from currently is very consistent with that same injury that I had back then in early 2013, which now I have right wrist injury, I have a left wrist injury, which I was picking up a water heater trying to dump it down a pit, and a rope some kind of way was wrapped around the water heater that I didn't even see. And as the water heater is falling into the pit, it wrapped around my left arm, and it almost pulled me into the pit. And I'm trying to get it off the rope off my arm as the pit is, water heater is dangling over the pit, and I'm being pulled down. That injury occurred from that. It's a very dangerous job. Any part of the garbage company is pretty much a dangerous job. So I'm actually currently still to this day from September 2014 until current time. I have not been physically at the company. I've actually been out on workers' comp, which now they are very nice. You know, anything that I need in terms of the doctors asking for, they pretty much okay it. Before, when I had my right wrist injury, back in 2013, it was a whole different story. But now, I guess they're seeing that this thing is, it's not a game, it's not a joke, that, you know, I'm taking everything serious. And I guess in the, you know, the process of not trying to retaliate even more against me, they're just okaying everything to go through. So we went to court one time, early 2015, where we saw a judge, and the judge telling us, you know, gave us our whole schedule for what was going to happen, the times and everything else. I already know that this process takes about 3, 4, maybe even 5 years to go through courts and to settle. Fast forward a little bit. I haven't really been at the company much, so I don't really know too much that's going on there at this current time. I've been in communication with some people here and there. So now, with fast forward a little bit more, I'm called in for another court case to where I'll sit down with a summary settlement. And in the summary settlement, I'm told by another lawyer that basically this judge that I have has two other cases that are kind of strange that he threw out. One had to deal with a noose that was on a job here in San Francisco, and another had to deal with a sexual harassment where a manager reached his whole entire hand inside of a woman's blouse. So he threw those two cases out. So I'm looking, I'm saying to myself, okay, well, I guess maybe this is how mine is going to turn out. I was deposed by the company where they had a black woman from Texas depose me. And in the deposition, of course, context of white supremacy came up, the interview and some of the things that I said. One of the things I fully remember that they asked me about was the fact that I said that they run the company like a plantation, in which I had to defend my words. And I basically defended how I felt and why I felt it was ran like a plantation and why even still currently it is ran like a plantation. You have the fear factor and so many other things. I was also questioned about what I wanted to do. Well, what do you plan on doing? Which I told them, I don't have any plans right now. I'm just going to continue with the lawsuit, and we're going to continue on that. We have taken action, and there is action that is planned for the future also. But let me back up just a little bit for the deposition. In the deposition, I was also asked, what is my understanding of racism? And when I explained to them what my definition of racism was, the black lawyer that they hired said that she had no understanding of racism still existing till today. And I looked at her funny, and I was like, well, how could you feel like that? And you come from Texas. Texas is very, all the states are racist, but definitely Texas. I mean, things happen in Texas every day. She said, no, I don't believe that. I don't know anything about that. And I'm like, okay, well, I understand you're probably just playing this role for this deposition or in front of these people, which I was speaking to white people that were in the room. But I know that you understand and know about racism because I'm sure you grew up under it. I was actually asked in this deposition to submit my phone records, which I denied. They wanted to find out who it was that I had spoke to and told about this case. And I told them that was a major invasion of privacy. They actually asked for my Facebook account. I gave them my Facebook account name and told them that the information on there, they could go and look at, anybody could look at. It was not private. It was open to the public. They came back after the second deposition. I had a 2-day deposition, and they requested from my lawyer that I give them all access to my Facebook account. And I told them that is not going to happen because that's an invasion of privacy. I just don't understand some of the things that they're trying to do. I do understand it. They're trying to defame my character. Also in the deposition, I found out that Gregory Foster, who is the black co-worker whom John Peralta put the noose on his belongings, that he came out and spoke out against me personally and said that basically I never saw the incident that had happened, in which I had to explain to them there's no way that anybody in the company can tell what my eyes have seen or what my eyes did not see. So they tried to play that role and try to play that avenue and make it seem as if I don't know anything. They tried to play the avenue of me not having credentials to drive trucks. They tried to go through my DMV record and say, hey, well, how long have you had your DMV? How long have you had your Class A license, which is a commercial license to drive big rigs here in California? They just went through a whole list of things in the deposition. And then also, too, they brought up some of the other workers that came out against, to speak out against me, and some of the managers, they came out to speak out against me, of course. There were a few other things that I don't fully remember, because just some of the key things, of course, were the fact that they brought out you. They brought you up twice in the context of White Supremacy Show. They brought that up two times in the deposition, and each time I had to defend my words that I said, and also they actually quoted something that you stated at the end, why I agreed to. And they were like, well, do you feel like that? And I was like, yeah, I feel like that. I feel like white people are a major issue here in America and dealing with us, definitely. So that happened. And then to fast forward a little bit further, currently what's going on, I've been in contact with KPFA, Steve Zeltzer. He's been helping me to get a few actions going. I've had a couple of speaking engagements to where I've been expressing what's going on. We had a rally in front of Recology on July 27th, we had a rally in which, of course, they contacted the police department, and the police department came out about two squad cars and asked us a couple questions, asked me personally, well, hey, what's going on? I'm like, hey, nothing's going to happen. This is just a rally in front of Recology, letting them know what they did wrong, letting them know that, you know, more action will come. We actually also have another rally scheduled for the 21st of this month, to where we're going back. We're not going away, we're going back. We're gaining momentum. Unfortunately, a lot of the workers have not came out and spoke out against Recology and some of the treatment that they have experienced. There is one driver that I was contacted by, whom I hope is listening in, and who probably at some point during question and answer he can speak on some of the issues that he's faced, but he contacted me and said that he is now experiencing racism on the job as well. I believe that this same manager that he's experiencing racism from is the same manager whom was transferred from another department, where a black worker was basically fired for stealing precious metal money that he would recycle and stealing the money, where he was called by a white biker gang here in California, called and threatened with his life. I believe this is the same manager that they knew, the company knew, was at fault. But they kept him, fired the black man, and moved this manager to another position, which I believe now he's in this position where he's causing another driver in the company, and other drivers, I should say, because it's not just the one, but other drivers' problems.
Wow. Context of white supremacy. Amazing. Amazing. I took notes and chuckled as you kind of gave us the update. To get some of the notes that I took as you move through your narrative, to go back to some of the folks at Recology, the head HR manager, Kathy Jamison, is this a white woman?
She's a black woman.
Black woman, okay. Kathy Jamison, black female. Yeah. And then Varessa Scott, she's also with Recology. Is she white or black?
And she's a black woman as well.
Black, okay. They power move. So the people they send for the conversation, both black females who come, you know, to tell you, hey, this is what it's going to be, $50,000, and, you know, you getting a pink slip to get on out of here and find another place to work, and if you don't want to take that, then, you know, whatever. And we really don't want you here at all. We had our druthers, we would toss you out immediately. For some of the folks that are listening in who might say, you know, hey, Mr. Washington, you came on the program, we appreciated hearing from you last year and hearing from you again today, but why in the world would you send a copy of your visit to the cows to the folks that you are working with? Why did you send that to them?
Because honestly, to be honest with you, I don't have anything to hide, and anything that I say or anything that I feel, I want it to be known. I don't believe that, you know, when I'm gonna say it how I feel it. When black people get together and we have a powwow and we're talking about things that we experience and you know, with white people and whatnot, it shouldn't be a mystery. It shouldn't be, you know, something that's hidden. You know, we got to be men and stand up, you know, as men. And hey, if they would have found out about it as if it was a secret, I wonder what they would have took that as then. But I wanted them to know. So I sent them a copy of the archive. I sent that to them. I wanted them to know what I said. I wanted them to know that this is what's going to happen and this is how it's going to happen. At this point, you know, when I did the show, I believe at that point I was still kind of going through a lot of the issues back in July, so I didn't really know what to do. But at this point now, I mean, I've been so, I've just been broken down so much that at this point I don't want to do anything but fight. I just want to fight. And not fight in a physical sense of, you know, we go out in the street, we, you know, I'm hitting you in the face, hit me in the face. No, I want to fight you in the way that I know I can in court and bringing things to your doorstep. Will we take money out of your pocket possibly by doing actions? Will we may shut down business? It won't be business as usual. You can't just do these sort of things to black workers. It's just not acceptable anymore. So that was part of the real reason why I wanted them to know. And to be honest, I've sent out a couple text messages to some of the workers and hope that they may pass it on and hope that they may listen in and say, okay, well, he's still at it again. I mean, I'm not scared of that anymore. That is over with me in terms of being, fearful or, you know, worried about losing my job. At this point, I already know they don't want me there. Really and truthfully, I don't really want to be there, but I have no other means of income, so that's what I have to do at this present time. But at the same time, you're not going to just force me out like that by, you know, these bully tactics and, you know, some of the things that they try to do to make you want to leave. That's not going to happen. So that's the real reason why, to answer your question, I sent that information to them so that they could know. I want you to know what I said. I want you to know what's coming down the line.
What's your response? And particularly given what you just shared, seems like they do not want you to be there anymore. You're saying you don't really want to be there anymore either, given, you know, what it's been for you for the last couple of years. They come and say, hey, we are willing to give you $50,000 and have you hit the road, and we can just go our separate ways and forget this ever happened. What's your response to people who say, hey, man, Mr. Washington, you just should have took the $50,000 and moved on? This just seems like a lot of stress, and now you're going to have to deal with them for another 5 years. You could have got that money, got another job, and just move forward with your life. Why not do that?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, it's not as if I'm not looking or I'm not searching for another job. Definitely looking for another job, because Recology, in my opinion, is not the end all. That's not, you know, I came to Recology looking for a job originally when I first got hired. And, you know, if there's a better position somewhere else, then I'll take that. I'm actually in the process now of starting my own company, a construction company, which I believe in July 2014, I expressed that as well. And I was trying to use the money that I would make from working at Recology to help, you know, support that. But now, you know, I'm thankful that doors have been opened and I am moving in the direction, you know, to where I can possibly get this construction company going and moving off the ground. In terms of the $50,000, it never really was about the money originally. Originally it was, I wanted, and it still is to this day, I still want an apology. One, and two, I still want them to change policy. I want the other workers that are there, I want them to be given, one, justice, and I want them to never have to go through what I and possibly what others may have gone through that I don't know about or that they may not know about. Nobody should have to go through what I endured at all. And the $50,000 part, you know, originally, to be honest, it wasn't even that. I just wanted my back pay for the time that I was on workers' comp. While they denied me workers' comp, I wanted my back pay. But then as things started to transpire and them not giving me a position possibly that I wanted or that, you know, I applied for that I was qualified for, I never asked them for anything that I was not qualified for, never. I never said, hey, can I get a driving job? You know, that'll shut me up for something I wasn't qualified for. I asked for everything that I was qualified for. And the whole concept of $50,000, I don't know what anyone else knows, but in San Francisco, California, $50,000 is really not a lot of money. It may be in other parts of the country, but in San Francisco, after you pay taxes, after you pay a lawyer, you may only end up with maybe about $20,000. And $20,000 is really not enough. And for what I endured and also for the retaliation part of it, I believe that they're on the line for a lot more than that. But at the same time, it also still stands to this day, and they know this. I've told them this in many means and in the deposition. I still want an apology, and I still want policy to change. there's other people up there that I know, I care about, and I want to see things better for them as well.
And when you say you want this apology, is this from Recology, Mr. Peralta? Who specifically do you want to apologize, and for what?
Well, I would like Recology to apologize for what they put me personally through, because I was the only one who actually they put through all of this hell. In terms of John Peralta, they apparently did have a meeting that I was not able to be involved with. They had a it was a meeting that they told me that I would be able to come in and he would apologize and we could talk to him, we could ask him any kind of question we want to. I was told to go to one part of the company and anticipating and waiting for them to come down there to have this meeting with HR and people from the union. That never happened. The meeting that they had happened on the other end of the company where I was on the other end. And I'm sitting there waiting patiently. I even asked the lady, the receptionist at the front desk, hey, where are they at? Do you know? Oh, I don't know. I don't know where they are. I don't know what's going on. So I'm like, okay. The meeting was over. About an hour later, somebody comes down to the office like, oh, well, we didn't know that you didn't know where to go. Well, no, you sent me a text message. Or no, I think it was they called me and left a voicemail message and told me where to go. But it never happened there. John Peralta, apparently in this meeting, he apologized, and some of the workers kind of grilled him about it. But once again, the workers don't really have any issue because of the fact that they're all scared. So some of the questions that I may have asked or wanted to know from John Peralta and also the union, they didn't have the mindset to ask those questions. After this meeting happened, he apologized. They all went back to work, and everything was supposed to be okay. I immediately was furious and went to go see the shop steward for Recology, for the union. As I speak to the shop steward, he tells me, well, you know, hey, just go on and put the blame on me because I'm the one who fought for him to stay here, which he's a white male. I'm the one who fought for him to stay here. And, you know, what he did was just a stupid mistake, and, you know, we all got to get over it, and, you know, let's just go on back to work and get back to work. I was like, no, I'm not accepting that. This is unacceptable. For one, I wasn't even involved in the meeting. Then they asked me, the shop steward asked me, well, if you would have been in the meeting, would it have made any difference? I said, I don't know. If I would have been in the meeting, maybe we could have made that decision. I could have made that decision on my own, but you can't just make the decision for me because I'm not in the meeting that it wouldn't have made any difference. I'm the one who has a real issue with what's going on, and I'm the one here who seems to have been suffering the most behind what is going on. At this time, I spoke to him for about an hour and a half. I called in his office. I used his phone. I called the union business agent. His name is John Bruchard. Now, John Bruchard originally was one who stood up for me when Recology had terminated me from the driver position and told them that I wasn't trained properly. But they still played that card that I hadn't made my 120 days. I only made 100 days of working at the company. So I was let go. Now, at this time, John Bruchard now is saying and telling me again, oh, well, this is your union brother. And, you know, you just have to just get along. And, you know, he did something stupid. It was like a joke. You know, and then this is at the same time he told me that, you know, he understands. I was like, you understand? You know, yeah, I understand what you're going through. I'm like, no, there's no way that you being a white male can understand a damn thing that I'm going through personally as a black male. No way. There's no way. At that time, he retracted his statement and said, oh, I apologize. I didn't mean to say that. You're right. You know, I need to be more empathetic and sympathetic. And I was like, well, you need to be something. But that definitely was out of pocket. At this time, he also tells me that there's nothing that could be done. The company actually made a mistake, an error. Instead of filing two separate incident reports, which they should have done was file two separate incident reports, they filed it as one. So since they filed it as one, John Peralta gets to stay by union bylaws, which I was like, that's crazy. That just makes no sense. Why didn't you all stand up? If I would have done something like that, being a black male at the company, if I'd have done something that was racially motivated or, you know, something to go against homosexuality or something like that, I probably would have been fired immediately. It wouldn't even be no questions asked. So I'm like, well, how does he get a chance to? But then again, from July 24th, John Peralta's mother was sleeping with a manager at the company. And I don't know if him sleeping with a manager at the company, his mother sleeping with a manager at the company, I don't know if that was a reason why, you know, they found a loophole in how not to get rid of him. It sounds like it to me. So, you know, all of that mixed into it, just doesn't sound right.
Whoops, muted myself.
Hello?
Context of white supremacy, my bad. I was saying that for listeners, Mr. Washington, he did mention his suspicions that Mr. Peralta, that he might have had some sort of sexual liaison with somebody else at the company, and that might have worked to his advantage in all of this, and him, you know, helping to keep his job. Since you did send that program to your employees, I assume if they listened that they did hear that part, and if that didn't come up, then to me, that sounds like you were saying something that's truthful. I would have responded immediately if you had been on broadcasting things that were inaccurate or untruthful, what have you. I would have raised that immediately, but I guess that didn't come up. For folks, if you all have questions you'd like to ask Mr. Washington, feel free to chime in. The number is 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Do see some hands get in. Maybe one, two quick questions, and then we'll get to the phone line. Going back, I guess, to Philip Taylor, where he participated in our, he called in during the last time, victim of racism. He mentioned that he answered the question. I think I had been asking a lot of people during last summer. I still ask people if they're afraid of white people. And he gave his emphatic response. If he's not like in HR, or I don't know if he's even employed at Recology, why was he involved in the negotiation? Like, did you ask him to be present, or how did he get involved in all this?
To be honest with you, no, he is not an employee. Our relationship, I don't know if it is based off of this or whatever it may be, but our relationship has faded some because of the fact that his cousin, again, is Keith Jackson, and I am very voiceful in letting everyone know of the corruption. They contacted Keith Jackson to find out who I was. That was the real reason why Keith Jackson was contacted originally, and also Philip Taylor to find out who I was. Philip Taylor and myself, we're like cousins. We're like family. And in us being like family, I guess they contacted him to find out, you know, hey, you know, how can we talk to him? What should we tell him? What should we offer him? You know, to find out more about me, what sort of influence does he have? You know, who is he linked up with? You know, all of these things. And at the same time, from my understanding, what Philip Taylor told me, Kathy Jamison had told him by me coming to the meeting, and if I were to accept the deal, whatever, they were going to work out something with him with some form of an employment. Like, I don't know if he was going to be employed immediately or however long it was going to take. But that was on the table, from my understanding, for me coming to take this deal. He's not employed with Recology at that time. I don't know if he is currently. At that time when we actually met, we were not. He was not. I'm sorry. He was not employed. I was the only employee involved in that whole entire discussion, besides Kathy Jamison, which is the HR manager. So I don't really know why he was involved, other than the fact of them just trying to find out who I was, and that was the only person that I guess they could find that knew me and that had some kind of ties where Kathy could find out. But, you know, it's funny, too, also now that my lawyer has contacted me not too long ago to let me know that he has been actually trying to contact Philip Taylor, and Philip Taylor has not returned any of his phone calls. But the problem there is that Philip Taylor already informed my lawyer of what he heard, which is what I just explained today, and how she basically told me that they were retaliating against me, that they would never promote me. So I'm hoping that, you know, those who are involved who are not employees of Recology don't get themselves in trouble, because when you do depositions, you're under oath. And if you lie under oath, well, then certain things can happen to you as well. So I'm just hoping that, you know, they haven't tried to offer somebody a deal on the side, or, you know, hey, look, if you don't, you know, if you don't say that you were at this meeting or this meeting never happened, you know, then we'll be okay. There's no way that Keith Jackson can deny that he came to my house. He has a track, or he had a tracking device on his leg at the time, and there's ways to go back and find out through GPS where he was at this time. So we know that he was here. So that shows right there, also proving the point that corruption is involved, and why are they contacting other people to contact me as if it was going to, I guess, I don't know if they thought that was going to be an intimidation or whatnot by having Keith come and tell me I need to take the deal, but I wasn't intimidated at all. It didn't bother me at all. I'm like, Keith, I'd advise you to stay out of this. It's none of your business. You already have enough going on with your case you have right now pending in federal court. So to answer that question quickly, I really don't know why they contacted these individuals other than the fact that they were the only ones that they knew that they could probably find out more about me, and that they thought that I could just take a deal and run and that would be it. But no, it didn't work that way.
In the report at the San Francisco Bay View, Mr. Osorio, he writes, gives us a little bit of the update, and then you give your own commentary. And you've been writing and talking about doing interviews and what have you, and some of the different commentaries that are out there where you've responded. One of your responses, you said that you suspect that Recology, that they might have manipulated somehow, encouraged some of your black coworkers to speak against you and to try to discredit you and the allegations that you've made. Can you kind of speak to the nature of your suspicions?
Well, definitely. So Greg Foster, who originally was the black coworker whom they put the noose on his belongings, John Paul put the noose on his belongings, there was a dog that was found last year in 2014, I believe it was, in the beginning of 2014, and he didn't actually find the dog. It was a group of us that found the dog, and it was another worker who actually picked the dog up, walked the dog downstairs with another worker, and helped nurse the dog back to, you know, health as best they could, and contacted the SPCA to come pick the dog up. But for some strange reason, that coworker did never received any recognition. They gave it to Greg Foster. And them giving it to Greg Foster, he had to sit down with the mayor of San Francisco, Ed Lee, and they gave him the key to the city. So I'm sitting back watching this, and I'm just like, huh, this is strange, okay. At the same time, when they deposed Greg Foster, they asked him about me, and they asked him what sort of person I am, do I like my job, you know, do I work efficiently, all of these things. And what I explained to them originally, especially in the deposition, that black people have to work harder on jobs. They can't work at the same rate as white workers. We have to work maybe sometimes even twice as hard because of the fact that we're always being looked at as being lazy or as if we don't work as hard, or, you know, we're always taking breaks. And I am a hard worker. I'm just going to be honest. I am a hard worker. When I was a driver, I was a hard worker. Certain other drivers would see me out there working extremely hard, and they would be like, slow down. You're moving too fast. You're going to kill yourself. But I know that all eyes are on me as being black, one, and also, of course, then at that time, being new. There was another coworker. I don't know all the coworkers that they asked, but they brought this up in a deposition, was a female, black female coworker, Letitia. And they asked her some things about me, but they didn't really go too far into what she said, other than the fact that she was, you know, very upset at the fact that what John Peralta had did. Originally, she was willing to go all the way with the entire case and also possibly create a class action lawsuit against Recology. But as time went on, that never happened, and she sort of backed away. She always has been supportive in telling me, you know, to keep going forward and keep doing what I'm doing, but never herself jumping into it and fighting for herself and for the other workers. So, you know, that's about the most of the proof that I have in the deposition. They tell me what they interviewed Greg Foster on and what he said, and basically that, you know, I don't want to be there and that I'm very negative, and I don't even really talk to people at work. I mean, I'm pretty much quiet. I'm to myself. I don't really know you. I don't speak to you. they tried to say that me and John Peralta were enemies. And I had to shut that down because before all of this racial stuff started happening at the job, I asked this man many questions and talked to him about many things. And one of them was if he ever came across some Beats headphones, could he, you know, I'd buy them from him. So that doesn't sound like somebody who has an issue with somebody or somebody who hates somebody or dislikes somebody. They also brought up in the deposition that John Peralta has a non-white wife. I believe she's Mexican. And then asking me that, they were like, well, how can he be racist? And I had to respond and say, well, hell, I know from research and study that slave masters used to have come down and, you know, deal with the slave women in quarters and have children with them. So what did that really mean? And they were just looking at me like they didn't know what to say. But, you know, it's just certain little things that I've seen and that I've, you know, how I feel now I'm persona non grata. You know, I actually contacted my union, and in me contacting my union tells me that they are not able to file a grievance on behalf of me for retaliation against Recology because of the fact that I have a lawyer now and they would have to contact their lawyer. And this happened about a month and a half ago. I tried to file a grievance, and I still to this day have not heard a yay or nay from my own union. This is the people who I pay every month to represent me at the company.
Context of white supremacy. Wowee. A-plus response. That is I think we hear that about once every week on the news clips for the compensatory call-in where a white person, they've been accused of practicing racism, abusing, molesting black people in some way, and you can wait for it. Like, you can count down. 3, 2, 1. Wow. I'm not a racist. I've got black friends. I married a black person. Right. I shook hands with a black person 5 years ago. I mean, it'll be the most absurd thing. We even had the one, I think, from earlier this summer where the guy said, some of my best friends are niggers. What are you talking about, racist? Oh. What are you talking about, racist? Man, I've had tons of niggers that have been cool with me. We went out to dinner and
wow.
Context of white supremacy. That is standard operating procedure. Just have your response ready to roll. That was beautiful what you heard from Mr. Washington. If you even want to go current, what happened with Donald Sterling again? Oh, yes, right. Folks who are then who have questions, we'll go down the line. Give out the number one more time, 641-715-3640. And then the last, the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to ask a question for Mr. Daryl Washington. I just wanted to get in real quick because that's super important. And so anytime, any situation on the job, really any situation under the system of white supremacy, period, but particularly on the job, you should just go ahead and have it in your head. Anything that happens on this here plantation, I am on my own. Go ahead and cue your Patti LaBelle if you need to, but it's going to be just you. You're not going to have any backup. I don't care if all of your high school homies are there with you and these are your girlfriends, you all go hang out, these are your guys you hang out. I don't care. If I was on a job with my mom, I would not expect her to have my back. Like, that's just what it is. All of us have bills, mortgages, car payments, children that we're trying to take care of. It's just all of us. We're in such a weak position under the system of white supremacy. It's easy for white people to come in and pressure you to do. And who knows? It could have been white people. I think Recology is contracted through the city of San Francisco. So, I mean, who knows? They could have went and talked to some people. Oh, you got a court case pending. Maybe if you can help us out and get this Washington thing squashed, maybe we can help you get that court case of yours. I mean, who knows what could be said, you know, going around with all of this. Just have that in mind and just try as best you can to not get angry with them. Just understand the power dynamics and expect from the very beginning. Anything happens, it's going to be me by myself. Folks that dialed in, the caller at 4223, did you have a question for Mr. Washington? You should be with us.
Greetings to all the callers, and greetings to you, Gus.
Can you speak up a little bit? Your volume is low.
Let me try to adjust something. Excuse me. Okay, is this better?
That is better.
Awesome. Greetings to all the callers. Greetings to you, Mr. Washington. Greetings to you, Gus. I just had a quick question about the, I'm not really sure about the, I guess, the legalities involving California statutes in reference to an ongoing investigation, but did you already speak with your lawyer about possibly speaking on this show with Gus, the context of white supremacy, if that would be a problem in your ongoing case?
So let me just make sure, because I kind of, your volume is still kind of low. So you're asking if I spoke to my lawyer about coming on the show?
Information, yeah. I mean, basically, is that within statutes involving, like, an ongoing investigation?
Yes. My lawyer is actually saying that he doesn't have any, there's no gag orders on me. I can pretty much speak freely. So I do. Of course, there's some things that I do know that I'm not able to say or I shouldn't say, so I don't. But for the most part, I'm pretty much free to speak on my case. And if it ever came down to it, if I don't know that I'm not supposed to do it, then I really don't know if I'm liable for it. But at this present time, my lawyer has not said anything. He does know that I'm on the show today. I sent him the information. He knows that I've been doing rallies and have been having speaking engagements throughout the Bay Area.
Okay, well, much success with this case. It's unfortunate you are having to deal with it, but thank you for coming on to share your story. Thanks for
talking. Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. Thank you. The person, a retired firefighter in Florida. Did you have a question for Mr. Washington? You should be with us.
Yes, sir. Greetings. Just wanted to ask the question, were there any white people that positively co-signed on with your complaints involving the white male racist suspect?
So were there other employees you're speaking of?
Yes, sir.
No, sir. No other employees have come out to speak out against it, whether it be white or black or any non-white person. No.
Okay. Okay. I was just attempting to ask the question from a codified situation that says that it's a difficult issue to be able to gain something constructive from what you're doing, and there's no white person around to co-sign on with it. That's been my experiences on,
yes,
on situations that are similar to yours.
Yes, sir.
I'm not an attorney, but so I don't know exactly if it's an exact rule, but I do know it becomes very, very difficult. Not saying that I should go out there and try to solicit some white people to help me out in my situation. Just like Gus said, you're going to be on your own, and I think you know that. I think you understand that by now. But that was just a thought that I had in mind to ask the question.
Well, let me say, too, there are a couple of the rallies that we've had and some of the speaking engagements have been organizations who are primarily white. The rally that we had in July, it was mostly white people that were standing there that were from labor councils and from different labor jobs. Either they were retired or they were currently there at that time that we had the rally. But it's not just an issue with just only black people doing the rallies and whatnot. There are white people and other non-white people that are there besides black people that are at some of these rallies and that are, at this present time, we're gaining momentum to really do something really big on a major way. I believe the longshoremen are signed on to possibly take action at Recology, which is pretty big here in California or in San Francisco Bay Area. The longshoremen come out and they show out. I mean, I don't think Recology really wants to see that happen, but nonetheless, you know, we are gaining, you know, support. There hasn't, you know, I know a lot of people from, you know, in San Francisco, the community, San Francisco, and in the Bayview, I mean, the Bay Area, that have shown their support that are not, I mean, that are black. And, you know, it's not everyone comes out in support, but there is support in other ways. So I'm thankful for that. But there is white people that do come out and help in the rallies, standing up, making signs, or whatever it may be. But, you know, all, at the same time, they do understand that from how I feel, this is a Black Lives Matter type of situation, and I don't want anyone to kind of dictate to me how it should be done or how it should go.
Yeah. Well, my concerns was specifically the incident involved in what you were attempting to do to gain some compensation for that terroristic act that took place with you on the job.
Yes, sir. Specifically
talking about because all the things now involved in the demonstration, from my experiences, white people can't be trusted. I don't care what they say and sound like on as far as a quote unquote demonstration of some type.
I was just
wondering about that. Thank you for your answer, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
The person that dialed in last, appreciate that, retired firefighter, 6033, Bay Area caller, 6033. Did you have a question? Your line should be open.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Hi.
Greetings. Did you have a question?
Yes, I did have a question. My name is Marcus. Yes, this is Marcus.
Hey, Gus, this is actually the other driver, or the driver. I don't know if I tried to give you a brief understanding. He's the driver who's actually experiencing some racism on the job now, currently.
Oh, okay. Beautiful. I'm glad you could call in, Marcus. Thank you so much for joining in with us. If you want to comment on what you've heard from Mr. Washington, or if you want to give us some details on what's been happening to you, either or would be great.
Oh, okay. Well, I sure appreciate the opportunity. I want to thank you, not really being familiar with your show, but I want to thank you for an opportunity to support Daryl. And I do support Daryl. I have a long extended history with Reed College. I've been a longtime employee. Actually started in the 80s. And it just, you know, there's a lot to address, but I'll try to be as specific as I can. Number one, I wanted to express my support for Daryl. I wasn't aware, even being a longtime employee at Recology, I wasn't aware of this noose incident. How I became aware of it, I was actually on the job and was driving by the protests. I then stopped my vehicle and got out and listened to Mr. Washington talk about his experience. And was quite, you know, I was uneasy. I was uneasy about hearing that type of thing that it goes on at Recology. But more so than that, was shocked that I had heard nothing about it. Not the rally per se, but about the noose incident per se. And that that made me even more uncomfortable, not hearing about it, being a longtime employee. I'm a longtime employee. I've been in good standing. So I began to ask questions about it, and it disturbed me a little bit even further, some of the responses that I had gotten regarding this issue. So I began to talk to some of my other coworkers and ask them if they knew anything about it, and they said no. But I also, you know, spoke with white coworkers, and I asked them if they knew anything about it, and they expressed that they didn't know anything about it. But my issue is, you know, basically with the company, and how they chose this method to not communicate this type of issue. You see, we have several meetings as employees of Recologies, and so we have meetings all the time. And in these meetings, they really express, you know, company policy, law, because we are professionals. But you have all these meetings, and you talk about 150 ways that we can lose our jobs, but you won't bring this issue up. And that is my issue. as a longtime employee, I'm somewhat embarrassed that I didn't know that this type of thing was going on. I'm embarrassed that that the way they chose to handle it regarding this news incident. Listen, I have a long-time history, long-time association. My mother's from Jackson, Mississippi. My father's from Monroe, Louisiana. And I all know too well what a noose means to a black American. It's no laughing matter. It's no joke. I then inquired, also like Mr. Washington, I inquired with the union. They told me their position regarding the employee who placed the noose, that they felt that he was extremely contrite, that he was very sorry, and he expressed that. And that's acceptable to me. I mean, that's what the union's job is for. If that's the way they decided they want to handle it, that's the way they can handle it. But I don't think that Mr. Washington should be looked upon as somebody who is causing trouble. Because without that that protest, I still would quite possibly be in the dark whether as this incident had occurred at Recology. Now, I'm speaking because I do have actually a great appreciation for Recology. I do think as a whole we do a good job serving the public. Our reputation is impeccable in San Francisco. And that's why I'm speaking out, because I want that to continue. I want that good reputation to continue. I want others to who would like to support Mr. Washington and like to support myself, who are going through these problems regarding this racism. There's a lot of white coworkers. As I mentioned before, I spoke to some white coworkers, and they were appalled. But I think the crux of the issue regarding Recology and their way of handling this issue is, they actually deny, like the firefighter from Florida who called in, they actually, you know, deny my support of white coworkers, my support of Mexican coworkers. They deny them the opportunity to stand, to take a stand regarding this issue. You see, it doesn't sit well with them either. They don't support that type of activity either. But when you have a company who has decided to handle it in a manner in which as few as people would be able to know about this, then you have a situation like Mr. Washington, you know, him feeling that it's him against the world right now. But slowly and surely, you know, slowly but surely, the word's getting out. People are talking about it. I, for one, am trying to get people to talk about it, you know, to address this issue, and for us to be able to come to some type of medium as to how this thing and the policy that Mr. Washington, I want to forget that, the policy, that these policies have changed. Because as I mentioned before, this is not something that the black community takes lightly. A noose is a death threat for all intended purposes. So I do believe it was a method or a tool used, thousands of uncounted numbers of African Americans and black Americans in the South have been lynched with this apparatus. So it does maybe carry, you know, it does carry a deeper meaning than I believe they would have us care to believe. It's an extremely serious issue. Why the company didn't speak about on it, outspeak on it at some of the company meetings regarding this issue, that it won't be tolerated. Take a stand. Take a public stand on something like this. You know, you're a public company. I mean, you contract with the city and county of San Francisco. You should take a public stand on something like this. Other racial issues have arisen, such as last week in the Silver Terrace community. Silver Terrace, the San Francisco community, there was a lot of signs that were posted, no more Chinese, you know, and based on the information I received, they actually had a police investigating this issue of these signs being posted or spray painted in the neighborhood, and no more Chinese. Now, if you can have a police investigation, and I'm hey, I'm far from an official, far from knowing how policy goes, but it seems to me if you can have the police department investigate some spray painting of some no more Chinese signs, then how much more so if someone threatened you with your life by putting a noose on your belongings? I don't know whether it could be investigated by the police or not, but it seems a much more serious issue, you know.
Right on. Did you, Mr. Washington was saying that you had experienced your own issues of racism. Are you able to kind of give us, we have other folks that called in as well, but are you able to kind of share what you personally have experienced?
Yes, I am willing to do that. I have had an issue with a supervisor, and we had a couple discussions, you know, regarding just his attitude, his general demeanor when dealing with the employees. But in particular, he deals harshly with all the employees, but he deals in particularly harshly with the African-American employees, with the black employees. And I've had several conversations with him regarding this, and had asked him to kind of, you know, take a step back, relax. I know it's a new situation for you right now. And I just really don't think that he took me seriously on that. So we began to, you know, to move forward. I began to take steps to, you know, just to document some of these things, just to, you know, talk with some of my coworkers, some of my coworkers of all nationalities, some of my white coworkers, some of my Mexican coworkers, and, you know, in particular, some of my African-American coworkers. And it's a consensus there that this individual has a real problem. I then brought this problem to the attention of the department head, and after I witnessed a couple incidents, man, that was just, wow, I mean, that was just kind of startling to see, to him to use that kind of language in degrading the African American subordinates, as you know, him being
what type of language specifically? Like, what did he say?
Oh, it's gross profanity.
Oh, okay.
Profanity and dealing with them regarding job decisions, regarding some work performance, and regarding just some general instruction that the job, you know, required them to fulfill. And these guys are excellent employees, longtime employees. So I confronted him on that issue, and then it really began to kind of really spiral into a real dark place. I then informed my manager, his manager, what exactly was going on. I made a complaint with the union. The company had a meeting. He was not present at the meeting. I then asked why he wasn't present at the meeting, and the management at that time, which was Alan Parati and Mr. DeMartini, Rob DeMartini, were present at that meeting representing the company, and they began to get a little agitated because they told me that I had no right to even ask that question, and I told them I had every right to ask that question because, listen, everybody has a right to face their accuser, and if they're denying that these things occurred, if he's denying that these things occurred, then he needs to be able to face myself and another coworker who was, you know, was there with me regarding these charges. And so they began to say, hey, we're going to have an investigation and whatnot. And months went by with no word on the status of the investigation. So I began to, you know, really press them for an answer in the investigation. And it just come to the conclusion that they were just hoping that I was going to give up on this and it was going to go away. But it's not going to go away. So I began to press the issue even a little bit more. I pressed the union more for representation. We had a mediator. We had a meeting in which he was present at the meeting. I take that back. We had a meeting with the union in which he was present on the second meeting, and he denied that their problem even existed. He denied all the allegations. So I then began to let them know that there was just more than just myself and my coworker who have experienced these things, and we pressed on for even the mediation. So we met with a mediator in the media, and we, you know, everything was laid out on the table once again, and the manager began to say that that he felt that we took these things in a wrong manner, that they were somewhat made up. Well, the mediator, you know, really, really informed him, look, we don't have a right, if the company wants to stand by this employee, we don't have a right to have him removed. And my request was, I don't want him to be a manager or a supervisor in which he has to manage African Americans. And no one should have to tolerate it, but when you see it's really directed at African Americans, Black Americans, then, you know, it's extremely difficult. It's a hostile work environment. He began to retaliate, the retaliation part. He began to retaliate by threatening, you know, he's withholding overtime opportunities. He retaliated by threatening to adjust hours. He'll change your hours. And something that always happens when he was there, and I also brought that to their attention, is no African-American employees or Black American employees of Recology, and that, which is the warehouse department, what we call the cart department, as long as he's there, we don't have an opportunity to work together on any project. He makes sure that he has this mentality that he's going to divide and conquer, you know. So when we stand together, we may talk, or while we're doing a job, while we're working, we're actually working, and we work hard. Any conversation there, he attempts to break up, disrupt. He approached myself and a couple of the coworkers in a real hostile manner, calling us all bullshitters, you're bullshitters. Well, listen, I got 32 years with this company of faithful service, and I'm sure I couldn't bullshit my way for 32 years. Began to the other few incidents of withholding overtime. Some of the African Americans, myself and a few others, we do have a enormous amount of seniority, so that qualifies us for different types of overtime assignments, weekend assignments, and things of that nature. And he would just post that that there'd be no work inside our warehouse, and let us know there's no work available for you. But when we would return to work, and for weekend work in particular, we would leave on Friday, return to work on a Monday. And there's an enormous amount of work that's been performed in that warehouse, but he allocates that to, he'll say there's no work to be done in the warehouse, but he then brings in people to do work in the warehouse and then say, you know, there was nothing there for us. So I also brought that to the attention of the, his manager also. And after some debate, we went back and forth, I actually had come in and had taken pictures and showed him pictures of work that had been performed over the weekends. And so he's been somewhat relented. The supervisor then admitted that work had been performed over the weekend and that it's not going to happen again. Well, I simply said, well, the work has been performed in the department after you had informed us that there'd be no work performed in over the weekend, but I think we should be compensated for that. And he said he'd look into it, and the result of him looking into the compensation for the lost overtime is he paid it to someone else and said, well, that particular guy was, he was ahead of you in the overtime, in that particular overtime assignment. I then informed him that particular guy had refused the assignment, had refused to work, and that he's really not due to be paid. And I was then informed by Alan Parati, who was the manager, that he was he paid him anyway, and his decision. So I began to press him more on it, and I just simply asked him a question. Myself, my coworkers, we have a total of probably between 130 and 150 years of service to this company. Good service. And to take the word over an admitted liar, he admitted he lied, and not pay like you're supposed to be paying. Paying the Black American workers, our Black workers here, the money, the compensation that we were denied the opportunity to earn. See, it's not a situation where they just give you money. You work for it. So we were denied the opportunity to work for this money, and I think we should have been compensated for it. And I told them how disrespectful that was and how it really makes us feel as employees, you know, as black American employees, that, you know, so disrespectful and uncaring, you know. It's actually ruthless.
Absolutely. I just want to pause right there so we can get some of our other folks in, but I think that's important for so many reasons, just in terms of, because that same thing that I was saying, Mr. Washington was with us last summer, that we should not look at these sort of incidents as this being an aberration, this is an anomaly. No, this is widespread. You see this pattern, not just for ecology, but I mean, if we want to focus, we're looking at that particular corporation today. But I mean, this is widespread in terms of patterns and things that you see. White people, they're in charge. They can control. Hey, we can decide we don't want to allow you to get overtime wages. Make sure that check is a little bit smaller if that's the way that we want to do things. Just, it's so many different things that happen on the job. It's just like you really have to remain vigilant at all times and just be prepared for when these things happen. And then you go about codifying how you want to deal with it. But I mean, this is not isolated. I'm sure it's probably 5, 10, 20 different black people who just heard everything that you just shared with us. And I said, man, I have experienced the same thing. I've seen the same thing. And particularly being talked down to, I'm sure every single black person who has a job can think of at least one time where they have seen, even if it's not you, even if it's other black people on the job, where, wow, these white people, the managers and what have you, they are going in and just being really nasty and profane in the way that they talk to black employees, but they don't do this to anybody else. So just non-white employees on the whole, I'm sure that's such a widespread way that white people practice racism, just verbally terrorizing black people on a constant basis. The person, and Marcus, if you want to hang with us, I can circle back once we get some of the other folks that dialed in.
No problem.
Yes, sir. The caller at... just hang tight. I want to nab some of these other folks. The caller at 5849. Did you have a question for Mr. Washington? You should be with us.
Yeah, yes, I am. Thank you. This is Oshayede Nesbitt. And I want to start with, first of all, commending Marcus. And I want to commend him for this reason, because it tied into what I wanted to say before he came online. And that is that oftentimes organizations and establishments who promote an environment of either overt or even subvert racism, they use the power of fear of loss to divide the people, whether it be a loss of money, a loss of privilege, or oftentimes a loss of comfort. And what I find our people particularly, others of course, but particularly with our people, it's the fear of losing what comforts they feel they currently have. But that is a individualistic way of thinking, because they're only concerned about the me and not the we. The we is always the bigger picture. It's always what really is the most profound part that would make their quality of life much better, but it's difficult for them to see past their immediate needs. That self-gratification, that immediate self-gratification is what tends to predominate in their thinking, not realizing that that's the very power that they are using in order to prevent them from getting true justice and equality. So I commend Brother Marcus for having the mindset that what is right, and what is wrong. And when a man or woman has the inability to identify and to admit that something is wrong, then you're in the bigger issue. That is what hinders our people most of all, because they have the inability to stand up for a cause. That cause is bigger than your immediate needs. Of course, we all have needs. That's natural. That's something that is common sense, that we have our need to put a roof over our head, our need to put food on the table, our need to clothe our children. Those are our needs. But oftentimes what makes it difficult is people's inability to see that your principal, in fact, should be higher than even your basic need. Because what we need more is self-actualization, the ability to be recognized as human beings, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And I have to coin the phrase in saying, power concedes nothing without a demand. Mm-hmm. No change has ever occurred without a sacrifice. All the changes that have occurred in this country have occurred because someone put their own basic needs or their own skin on the line. If you're not willing to lose something, then how are you going to gain something? This is where we fail.
Did you have a question for Mr. Washington?
I did have a question. My question is primarily in regards to his attorney. With the attorney, is the attorney thinking in terms of going for the retaliation or more towards the discrimination? Because I'm thinking about the retaliation in the sense of EEO laws that prohibit individuals from retaliating against you, and that includes denying you a right to a promotion. What is your attorney's focus?
So originally in December / January 1st of 2015, they were hit with a federal lawsuit. After going to court and after the deposition, we decided to file a separate case in state court for the retaliation part of it. Now, in talking to lawyers beforehand, I became aware that the federal part is usually the hardest one to win in. And the discrimination lawsuit is in the federal court. And like I stated a little earlier on the show today, that the judge who resides over the federal case currently doesn't seem like one to offer justice. So that may be a losing case based off of what another lawyer in our summary judgment brought out, was that this judge has thrown out another noose incident and also a very bad sexual harassment case he threw out as well. Just to be honest, I mean, I know in San Francisco, I don't know how it is in other parts of the country, but judges and lawyers, they all kind of kick it. Their children go to the same schools. I mean, it's just the good old boy system. So, you know, talking to other people, state is a little bit more, you have a better chance possibly to win a settlement. But at the same time, my thinking is still on the same as it has always been, is to change policy, and I want an apology. That's on the table. Yes, they may wait me out 4 years because they don't want the bad publicity, as in them losing in a case, so they may try to make a deal, but any deal that I will accept is going to have an apology and policy change. And that policy change, I am willing to sit down with possibly even Marcus himself, because he has been at the company for so many years, but sitting down with others that have been there to figure out what and how to change policy. I did state a little earlier that I no longer wanted to work at Recology, but I do want to clarify and clear that up. The reason that I no longer want to work at Recology is because of the fact that I kind of, you know, knowing and how things happen, I don't want an accident to take my life at Recology to where somebody may set something up or do something to sabotage. So that's why I no longer want to really be there, because I don't know what could happen. They could do anything. They could cause some sort of an accident to happen to where I could be disfigured, I could be dismembered, I could be killed. I don't know. So I'd much rather not be at that company, and I am looking for other employment, other places, due to that fear of what could happen.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I commend you for mentioning earlier that your main concern was the principle of it, and that your main concern was about making the environment better for not only yourself but for others, and that the money issue is just secondary, but that your principles are primary. Well said, brother.
All right. Thank you.
Right on. Person that dialed in, thank you for the question, sir. Person that dialed in, last four digits, 9451. 9451. Did you have a question for Mr. Washington?
Good evening, Gus. Good evening to the caller.
What's good? Good to hear from you, Thomas from New York.
Good to hear from you as well. Good evening to you, sir. I remember you when you came on before. And I commend you as well for, you know, your stick-to-itness. You know, California must have different laws than New York. I know every job I get, we have to sign on all types of paperwork that, you know, if I was to, you know, go and slander the company, I would, you know, get immediately terminated, or, you know, something on a radio show or something to that nature. So, you know, I guess they don't have that same thing going on out there. I had two questions. First one is, I'm curious to know, in the deposition, what was the definition of racism you used?
That question, when they asked that question, I basically kind of shot over that question due to the fact that I explained to the lady that she should know better what racism is, and the fact that what Recology was doing to me was a form of racism, and how I believe that white supremacy is the main issue and the main problem. And that was okay for them to understand what my deal of racism was. You know, I gave a brief understanding that, you know, because they were trying to paint me as if I was a racist, because they had already been on my Facebook page and seen some of the things that I post. But I'm like, there's no way I could be a racist, because I have no control or control over any other people. You all have that kind of control, not me. I'm just here trying to work. But that is, in my understanding or definition, part of what a racist is. You have control over whom you are over, to either, in my situation, deny promotions or make their life, in many aspects, a living hell, to where, you know, I'm not even able to pay my rent, provide food on the table, the basic necessities. I didn't have that. So I explained that part of it, but that was good enough for them to understand how I understood it to be.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for clearing that up. And my last question for you, and you know, I'll mute my line. Thank you for taking my call, Gus. Is if everything was to happen, best case scenario, you got everything absolutely you wanted for this. What would it look like? What exactly would you want to see? What would it look like if you got everything in your mind that you feel as though is deserving out of this case? And that's my last question.
All right. So let me explain that. So like I keep stating, is that it has to be a policy change and an apology. Not just an apology to me, but an apology to the other workers who experienced the noose and the Jet magazine, and the fact that Recology did not, in many people's opinion, do enough or do what they should have done in order to make sure that I or any other worker didn't suffer from stress, because I'm pretty sure some of the other workers have suffered from it as well, but they just are not able to speak out about it. They have to be quiet. The monetary aspect of it, I honestly have no clue. I don't know what monetary looks like or what it will be. I do know that for the pain and suffering that I have, you know, gone through, there is some form of monetary that's attached to that. But once again, that's not for me fully to decide. That's for my lawyer or for jury and a judge possibly to decide what I will be awarded, if I'm awarded anything at all. You know, I don't have a dollar amount. The fact that I even put the $500,000 when they offered me a $50,000, that was more or less me being, you know, cracking a joke, like, you know, no, I'm not taking none of those deals. I need you to do this, that, and the other. I don't expect to get $500,000. I don't even know how much the case is really worth. There's no way of me personally figuring that out. The lawyer, he has his opinion. But at the end of the day, it's based off of what the judge and jury decides to award myself for this case. But again, my main focus is I want an apology and policy change first and foremost. I can speak adamant about that. The money part of it, I have no clue of what I will get, what if I will get anything at all, or how much even the case is worth. I don't know.
Right on. That took care of Thomas in New York, I hope. See, the person that dialed in, last four digits, another Bay Area caller, 9498. Did you have a question for Mr. Washington?
Yes, thank you. Hi. I'd like to say the next time you have a rally, I'd like to participate because I'm not far. I should be able to make it to either wherever you go. I'm quite sure it's not too far. But I would like to participate if you don't mind. I can find you on Facebook or something, or try to link up. So when you have something like that, I don't mind participating at all.
Oh, no doubt, definitely. We definitely would love to have you there. We're going to have one on September 21st, which I believe is a Monday at 12 noon. We will be back at Recology at 501 Tunnel Ave in San Francisco, California, and the zip code is 94134. And also, if you have experience or anybody else who wants to come has experienced workplace bullying, terrorism on the job, racism, you are able to come out and have a voice, and I want you to speak and express what it is that you have going on, and we will actually, myself and others, will be there to support you and possibly even help you, you know, to resolve or to deal with whatever it is that you are going through on your job. So definitely, sister, we definitely love to have you. What is your name, sister, if you don't mind?
My name is Mary.
Okay. All right. Definitely, Mary. I mean, you can find me on Facebook. My name on Facebook is actually Darylle. And the last name would be Muhammad.
I'm writing it down. You said D like Victor or D like Daryl?
D as in Daryl.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For sure. We've had a good number of Bay Area listeners down through the years, so I'm sure other folks that are in that area, if they get the information, if they can squeeze that in their schedule, they might want to come out and participate as well. If you all are going to do some video and some other postings, definitely, if you can, you know, share, we would enjoy promoting and letting folks know who are down there closer to where you all are so they can get out, participate, and help you all get the word out.
Thank you. Definitely.
For sure. There are other folks who have questions. Don't be a straggler. Get your hand up. Don't wait till the last minute. The number again, 641-715-3640. And then the code that you put in is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you have a question. Before I check in, I guess number one, when I was reading some of the commentary in the final call, you had a lot of black outlets, black news outlets who did great reporting. The final call as well had a great report. Cows got some mentions on the other reports. One of them, you talked about where I guess some of the union representatives on your job, where you had kind of gone with them with some of the things, problems that you have been reporting and experiencing now. And they said, I guess at some point you reported that they said, hey, you know what? We're kind of tired of Mr. Washington being babied and us having to make all these allowances because he's so sensitive and fragile in the workplace. Did this happen?
Yes, sir. So, well, basically what ended up happening during the initial meetings with HR, I guess they contacted the union, or the union contacted them to find out some information, I guess, about me and what they were doing and what they plan on doing in the future. And in these conversations, I wasn't there. I didn't hear it, but it was reported to me in the meeting with Kathy Jamison and Veressa Scott, where we were at the head of the office for Recology. They told me that my union rep, which his name is John Bruchard from Local 350, Teamsters, came out and stated that we are tired of babying Mr. Washington on this issue, which was dealing with the noose, and John Peralta. We are tired of babying him, and we just want to move forward. And, you know, for some reason, you know, I've been to a couple meetings here in San Francisco and in the Bay Area, Oakland included, and it really gets to the point to where I don't want people to think that I am trying to union bust. That's not what I'm trying to do. What I want to do at this point is I want to bust up the leadership of the unions because they don't speak fully for all employees. I know for myself they don't. Now, I don't know about any other employees at Recology if they feel that they have, you know, spoken up for them. But me personally, I don't feel like they speak for me. And by the fact that John Bruchard even would say, one, told me personally that he understands what I'm going through, which he's a white male, didn't understand that. Then to come out and tell, not too long after, to tell HR that he's tired of babying me on this situation. Then after that, me contacting them and asking them for help in terms of a grievance, them denying that grievance, or not even getting back to me to give me an answer to what they decided to do. It just shows me that, you know, they don't understand. And there is a lot of black employees that work for Recology, I will say that. And I believe that they should have black representation in these unions, or in this union, and unions across America. If there's black employees, they should have black union business agents and shop stewards. Because there are certain issues that we will face on these jobs that are dealing with racism that a non or a white person could not understand. That's just reality. The business agent, he didn't take it as a joke, but he said that John Peralta hung the noose up as a joke. The shop steward was the one who said that it was just a joke, a bad joke. And he's a dummy for doing what he did, but it was just a joke. So when you have people like that that are representing any form of management or any form of being in charge or in this situation as a union, that's a problem. If you don't have enough understanding to know that a noose is bad, then you shouldn't be in that position. And you definitely shouldn't be in that position having black workers under you or having black workers who are in the union under you.
Wow, that one right there, for people who listen to the Cows, I know we have new listeners, but one of the things that I hope has been trademarked on this program, the importance of words, really with anything, but especially once we start talking about racism, you cannot just start saying anything and tossing terms around, definitions. All of that is very important. White people, racists, they overstand that. In my opinion, that's why consistently you are having these white people, representatives for Recology or the union officials or whomever they might be, that's why they're consistently saying, this was a joke. It was dumb.
Right.
It was stupid. Nobody's saying, now this is an act of terrorism. This is an act of racism. Mr. Peralta, he's not dumb. He is a racist or a suspected racist. That's the type of language that we should be using. And I would just, you know, for contrast, since this is Bay Area, I lived there for some years myself. If you could just imagine if, you know, it was a black person and you came in and let's say you made a sign and said, let's see, I'm going to make my sign and my sign is that the gay pride parade sucks, right? So you make your sign, you have a rainbow flag, this sucks, and whatever other comments that you want to make to degrade, quote unquote, gay people or homosexuals or lesbians, transgender, blah, blah, blah. So let's just imagine you do that. I don't think they're going to come in and use the language and say, oh, that was just a dumb joke. This person is dumb. We just need to, you know, get a little sensitivity training, and then we'll all hold hands and move. We're all one family here. Got to get along. I don't think that's the way that they're going to deal with it. Now, I could be in error. Maybe I'm wrong. You all can testify and let me know if I'm talking crazy. But it's consistent where it's minimized when black people are being harmed. Totally different anything else. And in particular, I would even say, especially if it's a black person, when they say that you are the one that have done something wrong, oh man, they marshal the forces. They use the most damaging language possible. I'll even stop just the incident over the weekend. People were talking about the high school football game. They're jumping up and down saying these children should be tried as adults. Not that they're dumb, not that they're immature, not that it was a mistake. Children, hey, they're still growing. We got to make sure they get a chance. No. Put them under the jail right now. They need to be charged with a crime. Just keep that in mind. The other question I want to make sure I got in from Mr. Washington, and then if some of the other folks, Marcus, if you all had more you wanted to get in. This has been going on for so long, and I know for people that talk about workplace racism, this comes up as well, that it can be something where white people just try and drag it out so that they can wear you out and just, this has been going on for two years. I'm done with this. I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of dealing with it. I just want to move forward with my life. At this point, looking back on everything that's transpired thus far, are there any things that you say, man, I wish I had done this differently? I wish I had not done this. I wish I had said this and not that. Are there any things looking back on that you would make improvements?
Well, let me say that, you know, we all make mistakes, and there may have been some mistakes that could have been done differently, could have been done better. But, you know, I'm a firm believer, you know, in cause and effect. And I don't believe that if I would have done certain things differently, that I possibly would have been at this stage and at this point that I'm in now. So with that, you know, I'm thankful for the journey that I've taken. It was a long, hard journey, and it's not over yet. But I'm thankful for that journey that I've taken so far, and it has gotten me to where I'm at now, to where, you know, I'm going to continue to fight. You know, and once again, my fight is not just for me or for my situation. It is for the workers at Recology, and I want to see them get peace. I want to see them get justice, and in that, I will get justice. I also, you know, I want to see policy change at all corporations. That would be the best thing, and I know that, you know, the workers are, we are the strength. We are the strength. You know, I don't care what union you're a part of. The union is not the strength. The workers, the average, everyday, 9 to 5, or whatever your hours may be, we have the power. We can say to a job, you're going to do this, that, or the other, and they will have to do it. Because if we don't show up at work, or we take other means of shutting down production collectively, not just by yourself, but collectively, we can do so much. And that's the key. So I don't regret anything that I've done. You know, I'm pretty sure there definitely could have been things that I possibly could have done better. But it's all a learning process. You know, I didn't expect, because I didn't know about this happening at that time when it was happening, in terms of what they would be willing to do, how far they would go. But, you know, once the monetary situation happened and I'm also kicked out on the streets and didn't have food, you know, to provide on the table for myself and for my children, at that point, that's when I didn't care anymore about fighting. And that's when, I guess, what some people call a pit bull fighting mindset that jumped into me now. I have no fear against what they throw. Whatever they throw, it is what it is. I'm willing to take that on at this point. And the fight is continuing, and it's not going to stop on my part.
context of white supremacy. I think Mr. Washington, he said earlier during the deposition with all this, I guess at one point they were referencing his first visit to the context of white supremacy, and they asked him about your agreement with one of my statements at the end of the program. I think I was saying the problem is white people, which it most certainly is,
right.
Unfortunately.
Right.
I think Marcus is still with us as well. And even before I get to that, if you all had anything else you all wanted to bring out that has come out in you all's situation being at the same place of employment, if you all can just think for a white person, a suspected race soldier, to get a noose, or really any act of racism, but with this specifically, to get a noose and put this on another black employee's belongings. If you could just think for a minute of that happening on your job, that happens to another black person, and you never even find out about it. In fact, it being something you find out about, that this happened like months down the road, maybe even a year after it happens, you find out about it. Like, what? And then you start going to talking to other people, and nobody knows about it. Just think about that as well in terms of how information gets controlled. Because I know a lot of people have jobs where they send emails every 5 minutes. We got new coffee cups. We got a new coffee maker. We got new toothpicks. Somebody dropped every 5 minutes. And then everybody else is gossiping about who got new shoes and who got new socks and where did you go this weekend and where are we going to drink. You have this incident happen? Nothing. That right there, in my opinion, might be an act of racism. But Marcus is still with us. The folks that dialed in, if you all had any other questions, or if you all specifically, Marcus and Mr. Washington, if you all had something else you wanted to make sure you pointed out about being in the same spot and what you all have observed and learned throughout this.
Well, yeah, you know, I understand what Daryl is right now. You know, Recology, the former name was Sunset Scavenger and Company, and the other former name or two partnership was Golden Gate Disposal. In the early days, many, many years ago, when I was hired, their reputation was less than sterling, and they've been able to make some changes. But it's been a long road. It's been a long road, and when you hear about something like this and experience it for yourself, not only hear about the situation with the news, but also experience it at the hands of workplace bullying and workplace retaliation and things like that by the hand of the managers, especially being focused on the black American employees, you know, it really lets you know that at some point in time, you're wondering whether they have forgotten the past and now they're doomed to repeat it. And that's one of the things why I wanted to be, you know, quite vocal. As I mentioned, I told Gerald at the rally, I said I had no mention of this, and actually, I want to say I probably was the only Recology employee standing there in uniform, you know, listening intently to what he had to say, because it does affect me. It does affect my black coworkers. It affects my white coworkers anyway, and it affects them in a way in which it denies them their right to stand up and say, hey, you know, this is wrong. This is wrong. I don't care what color you are. This is wrong, and this won't be tolerated, you know, as well as my Mexican coworkers to stand up and say, this is wrong. This is wrong and it won't be tolerated. As a black employee of Recology, I do notice things. I do notice things. It opens your eyes to a lot of things. You know, you begin to relook at some of these things and wonder, what's the proportion of black termination as far as employees? What's the termination of black discipline, you know, and how it goes about? And I do believe that it's at a higher percentage. That's my personal belief. It's that our termination, for whatever reason, violation of company policies or whatever, like you mentioned before about those young boys, they look at it differently when an African American is involved. He has an axe to grind. He's sour. He has an issue with some other things. Well, you want to attribute, and I've heard them attribute those things to Daryl and. And that's why I thought it was very important for me to say, okay, well, if you feel that way about Gerald, because, you know, he raised this issue, he wants it to be dealt with, he wants company policy changed, then what's your issue with me? I have an issue also. I've been an employee in good standing for many, many years. I've represented the company in many fronts. I actually have worked alongside and with the union to better work conditions for employees of Recology. So therefore, what are you going to do when I come and tell you there's a manager here that's using language with black employees that's just not called for, that's inexcusable? You know, what's my axe to grind? See, and that's how they tend to cloud the issue there. And I don't, you know, how they cloud the issue, they make it what it's not. And this is an issue here of the company being able to stand up and say, we support our employees. We don't and will not tolerate this type of behavior. And it should be making known. As I mentioned, we have several company meetings throughout the month and why they can't show us just a little bit of respect, a little bit of appreciation for all our years of hard work, and just stand up and do the right thing. I'm not asking for any compensation. I'm not asking for any money. And I do stand with Mr. Washington on this regard. Those who think that that Daryl's in it for the money, so to speak, well, it was a company that offered him money. Daryl didn't ask them for a thing. They offered him money. And when he addressed it, now all of a sudden his focus is on the money. I really appreciate being able to speak here with you and also to hear Daryl clarify that issue. You know, and I hope that they give him the benefit of the doubt, that they believe him when he says so, that these things are important, that his co-workers and fellow employees are important, and that this policy has to be changed. This has to be addressed. And I stand with Daryl on this. I don't know what lengths or how far this has to go, but, you know, they should be able to address this issue and accommodate all their employees of all colors.
And let me also chime in too. When you brought up the fact about the angry, being angry, and you know that angry black man, black male, you know, stereotype that they put on us. In the deposition, we had an issue to where they wanted me to come back at a certain time. Now, mind you, I've been in this office from almost 7 hours already. They wanted to keep it going, but I had something else to do with my children, so I had to leave. The white lawyer, who wasn't even really involved in asking any of the questions, other than the black lawyer who was asking me all the questions, of course, I'm sure the white lawyer was writing the questions that he may have had down or certain things that, you know, I may have said that he wanted to go back and clarify. I needed to leave at like 3 o'clock. The lawyer jumped up and he got extremely upset, turned beet red, and told me that, no, you're going to leave at 4. I looked at him and said, no, I'm leaving at 3. If you have any more questions for me, you can make another date. I'll come back and answer those questions. At that time, that's when he considered, or he called me, what are you angry for? You have this angry black man attitude towards me. I said, no, I don't have an attitude towards anybody. You telling me as if I'm supposed to just bow down and do what you say, I'm not available past 3 p.m. Take it or leave it. I have to leave. You already had me here for 7-8 hours. I have to go. Then at that time, the black lawyer jumps up and says, okay, let cooler heads prevail. Let's be cool. Me and the white lawyer are in a stare-down match at that time. So the arrogance and the trying to belittle and also trying to stereotype and put into this, you have a, you know, attitude or the angry black man, you know, syndrome, they try to push off on me. And it actually came up again as if he was a victim in the summary judgment, to where we were sitting down with another lawyer and he said, well, we apparently had issues with Mr. Washington, so we don't want to be in the same room with him as we decide what we want to do or how we want to do it. So that made me look bad, but I had to quickly jump up and clarify for him, no, I don't have that attitude that you're trying to portray that I have. You asked me a certain question. I didn't agree with that question, and I expressed to you that I needed to leave at a certain time. So now I don't want to be labeled as the angry black man. You seem to have had an issue with what I said, because maybe you're a white male and you think that you're disposed of whatever you say I'm supposed to go for, but them days is over. I'm not that. So, you know, that angry black male thing that they try to tag a lot of us with was very much a part of this deposition that I was in. And I'm very pretty much sure when we go to trial, if we go to trial, depending on what this federal judge does and the state judge does, I'm sure that that probably will come out as if I'm an angry black man, because they also tried to say that I hated my job and that I basically down-talked anyone who was in that position, in which I had to quickly shut that down when they asked that question in the deposition, because anybody who is working trying to take care of their necessities, I don't look down on them regardless if they make $5 an hour or if they make $150 an hour. It doesn't matter what you make. If you have to, you have to do what you have to do. I was shoveled zoo dirt in order to take care of my children and to take care of my necessities. So I don't look down on anyone for that. And I wanted to make sure that I said that part because of the fact that I am far from angry black man, but I do want to fight. And I'm fighting white supremacy, and I'm fighting this whole context of them feeling as if they have done nothing wrong to me and to other workers that have no voice, that cannot stand. So I stand for them.
What's your response, Mr. Washington, the more recent report that you had at sfbayview.com? We always tell folks kind of scroll down if you have a free moment to look at some of the comments. You had one person who went by the handle John Cotton, and he says, Cotton. So let me get this right. You were hired to be a driver but failed to perform, and Recology gave you a second chance at another position, and now you're complaining because you weren't given a second chance at a position you weren't fit for in the first place. It sounds like Washington is the type of person who consistently has to complain about something until he has his way. It also sounds like he's in it for the money, heard that again, and trying to milk the system as much as he can because he's not making as much as he wants. Apparently, $50,000 isn't enough for him to heal from the emotional, tragic event that happened to him, because more money will help him heal. What is your response to Mr. Cotton here?
I don't remember exactly what I said, but as today, you know, a lot of times we try to white people will try to cover up when we call out their BS and their racism and their white supremacy. They will always try to cover it up by making the victim seem as if I am the villain. And that comment alone lets me know that that person fully is out of touch with reality, one. Two, the fact that it keeps coming out that money is involved, I don't understand why that is so at the forefront. You know, that's not my motivation. It never has been my motivation. When I first was on the show in July 2014, that was not my motivation. And it's still today, in 2015, in September, is not my motivation. My motivation is to see white supremacy, one, destroyed on the job, for sure. And unfortunately, I know that we cannot change the mindset of white supremacy, but damn for sure, what you do on these jobs and what you do to somebody else needs to, has to, and it will change. And it will change because I believe now the country is starting to wake up. Me not being qualified for another position that I was in prior, well, I worked hard. I literally have people who used to drive, that I used to drive with, who would tell me that I'm moving too fast, slow down. I would be literally running. I also, before when I was a driver, I fully expressed to my operations manager, whose name is Dan Negron, who I believe is Marcus's, one of Marcus's managers, operation managers currently. I explained to Dan Negron that I need to have more training. I was not fully trained for the job. So if I'm not fully trained for the job, then there's no way that you can gauge and say that I wasn't qualified because of my own merits. I don't understand something because you didn't train me to do something. Garbage collecting in San Francisco, and I'm sure other cities across America, is not an easy job. Some people look at it as if it's easy. All you do is roll a toter up to the truck, hit a button, and it flips it in. That's not actual fact. You have to pick up on an average. I would pick up about a few hundred toters a day. Every shift, I'd have to pick up that many toters. I'm driving places that I don't know. They have crazy routes. I actually asked Dan Negron another time. I had asked him, I said, you know, Mr. Negron, is there another way that we can have to where we can pick this garbage up that you all may know? Because, a lot of the workers who have been here for years, like Marcus himself, I'm pretty sure Marcus knows all of the routes. If he was to ever go back and collect garbage again, I'm sure he knows all of the routes and would never have a problem and could probably do certain jobs in a short amount of time. Whereas opposed to somebody who fresh comes through the door, they already expect you not to know routes, and they already know that your time is going to be longer than somebody who's been there, who knows the routes, and who has driven these routes many times. So, and then also, the union came out and said that I wasn't trained properly at this time when I was in a driver position. So all of these people are saying the same thing, but how am I not qualified or not able to perform my duty? Then also, too, we must remember that I was injured. And being in that position, or as a driver and collector, any kind of injury to a wrist, a shoulder, or a back is going to affect your performance 100%. I reported it. They gave me 2 bracelets for my wrist. They never sent me to the doctor. And they also told me, one of the trainers, his name was TK, who I had an issue with before, saying that I was lazy and some other things. He told me that if I reported this issue and went to the doctor, that I probably would not pass probation. So therefore, of course, that put something in my mind like, well, hell, I want to keep my job. I thought I hit the lottery. This is like one of the best jobs that you can obtain in San Francisco and really in the Bay Area. Everyone talks about recology and the garbage collection in San Francisco. So, you know, when you hear silly things like that and people say silly things like that, you know, it just shows me that he probably is most likely a racist himself and suffers from white supremacy and just doesn't know any better. He doesn't know what he's speaking of. If he wanted to know, he should have asked me a question. I would have gave him a good answer.
Right on. Right on. Context of white supremacy. I want to take Mr. Washington's entire evening. The folks that are with us that had a hand up, anybody else have a question they wanted to make sure we got in? We can get a last word from Mr. Washington, and Marcus should be with us as well if they had a last word. Just any of the folks who had a hand up who had a question, if you had something you wanted to ask Mr. Washington before we wrap things up.
Yeah, tell us how to do it. Get how to do it.
I did hear 5849, but I didn't hear a question.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Do you have a question?
Oh, there we go. Yeah, I just had one for Marcus. I was wondering if, since you had to step up and address some of the issues that you've dealt with, have you continued to experience any, even if it's on a subtle level, have you experienced more of that retaliatory behavior?
Well, I would have to say, to answer your question, quite frankly, yes, they've been quite retaliatory in some of the things they're doing, the workplace bullying, the subtle intimidation, and things of that nature. But, you know, unlike Daryl's situation, I'm a longtime employee. I work with other black co-workers who are also long-time employees. And we had talked amongst ourselves and had decided that we were going to be staunch, we were going to stand together, and that we were going to meet this head-on. And it has been quite an exhausting battle. It has. It is quite taxing. They have a way of stringing these things out. And it just tends to wear on you, and it does make you angry, you know. And as soon as you display a little anger or frustration, you know, but of course, you know, being a Black American, it's labeled anger, frustration at the process in which we really, you know, have a no say so in pretty much, then you're, you know, they're going to stick you with that label. I like to say, I myself am a long time employee. I'm you know, an older man. I'm a more mature man, and these type of things that that they are continuing to do, they're being ineffective. And one way that I fight back is the more that they try this workplace bullying, it's just pushing me around, it's denying me my opportunity for weekend overtime and things like that. As long as I continue to be quite vocal about it. I continue to ratchet up a little bit the things that I'm saying. I talk to all my employees, no matter race, and let them know what's going on, what's taking place, and encourage them to look at the facts, and if they don't know any of the facts, is to ask about them. So, you know, we're gaining some support here, you know, and I'm quite hopeful that if they're looking to for our endurance or to break, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We've contributed as Black workers to Recology's success. There's no way I'm going to take a step back from that. We have become a part of the face of the company and the communities throughout San Francisco. We're highly regarded. Many of our Black employees have received letters of commendation, even letters of and minorities also, Mexican and minority employees and white employees have received letters of commendation regarding different issues and things that we encountered while we're, you know, out early in the morning on the streets of San Francisco, and that's the part that I want to return. I want to be able to stand up and say, you know, I'm proud to work for a company that addresses these issues head on, that they take a stand and not attack the people who are bringing this information to you, know, that they take a stand on these issues and become quite clear to all employees as well as all the residents of San Francisco that this type of thing won't be tolerated, you know.
Right on. I think.
Well, thank you for sharing your experience, and I commend each of you brothers for being strong and of worthy courage and sharing your experiences. It's definitely much appreciated.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. You don't know that's how encouraging it is, because you know
that's
they,
right.
You know, divide and conquer, man, and you can feel quite alone in
that's
making
right.
this journey. But you know, you can't compromise on what's right. And you know, I had a coworker ask me. He says, you know, well, why you? You know, and that's a really good question. And I told him, I said, that's a good question. Why me? Why me? Why Daryl? Well, sometimes, you know, you have to ask the question, why not you?
Right.
Daryl's fighting from a position. He's not a longtime employee. He doesn't have a lot of years of service. You know, he is more vulnerable. And I'm fighting from a position of being a longtime employee, very close to retirement. Receiving my pension, so to speak, and things of that go along with that, the health and welfare and my benefits on a permanent, regular basis. Why would I risk these things? And I said, why not me? Why not Daryl? Yeah. You see, you know, because at some point in time, you have to stand up and say, I'm going to involve myself in this because I want to be a part of it being done the right way. I want to be a part of a coming to a decision, a process, if you will, in which these things are going to be dealt with in a manner in which Black employees will be respected, will be expected to retain our dignity and dealt with in a dignified manner. For them to tell or make excuses that this is a joke or some type of insignificant issue, as I mentioned before, it's ludicrous. is absolutely ludicrous. And it is for all intended purposes, they want to call it a joke or he was just being stupid. I want to call it as it is, and it's a death threat.
Absolutely.
And that's a serious issue. This is a death threat.
Absolutely.
And it should be investigated. I don't have an attorney. I don't know the legal aspect, but the company has to stand up and make it very publicly known that this type of thing won't be tolerated.
Hang on one sec, because I think Thomas in New York had a question as well. Thomas in New York, you should be with us. Did you have a question you wanted to get in as well? I think your line should be open.
So I didn't have another question. My call dropped, so I called back into the show.
Oh, okay. Right on. Cool in the game. Cool in the game. I'm assuming then. Did we nab all of our questions? Everybody who dialed in who had a question, did we get everybody? Outstanding. Definitely. Oh, yes, sir. Go ahead.
There's one other thing, too, that I wanted to mention also. You know, this has really caused for myself, you know, to take heed to the call and the personal invitation to be in Washington, D.C. October 10th, 2015, for the 20-year anniversary of the Million Man March for Justice or Else. You know, it just got to the point where, you know, I'm tired of seeing what's going on across the country. You know, I'm tired of what is happening here in San Francisco and the Bay Area. Every time I turn on the news, it's some form of white supremacy to where they're doing something to harm, hurt, terrorize, or even kill a black person or brown person or a person, a non-white person. And I am definitely, I already purchased my ticket. I'm headed to D.C. And I'm hoping as I come back from D.C. to come with a renewed spirit on how to fight and combat workplace racism and white supremacy here in the Bay Area. So I really wanted to make sure that, you know, I expressed that and, you know, let it be known that, you know, this is causing a lot to happen, you know, and I know Marcus, he's upset. I'm upset, you know, and I think that the more that we stand together, because I stand with Marcus on all that he has going on, you know, I just got a phone call from him probably about 3 weeks ago, I believe it was, when he told me about what he was going through. And, you know, I know that this is how they do it. You know, this is what they do and how they do things on these companies. And, you know, I don't know if when I get to D.C. if I'm going to meet other people who are going through workplace bullying, workplace terrorism, but I would love to share with them some things that they can do, some things that they need to stay away from, and, you know, draw up a game plan, because it really seems like, you know, like you said earlier, Gus, that, you know, anywhere across America, there is somebody black that has been talked down to, has experienced terrorism. If they haven't personally, they've seen it at the hands of somebody else. So, you know, I think now it's time that, you know, we have to step outside of our comfort level and really let people know, you know, this is unacceptable. They seem to have a blueprint that they follow, so we have to come up with a blueprint that we follow to combat their actions.
Well said. Well said. We will definitely, and I am sure if you get down there, if you have the means to record or get some video that you can post, that would definitely be something to share, because I cannot imagine if you had that many black people present. And just are you having any issues with racism on the job? I cannot imagine it being, oh, no, everything is cool, getting my promotions, prop my feet up, and I'm waiting for my retirement. I just cannot imagine. And if you do find it cool in the game, you should take as many notes as you can so we can do what they're doing. Yep. But that's not my understanding of how things are operating right now.
And Gus, I definitely will do that. I'll probably interview some folks as I'm there, because I know it's going to be so many people that are there crying out for justice and want justice or else. So I definitely will have some video, and I definitely will post some, and I'll definitely get some video from different people around the country who have jobs and probably have some who have their own jobs, just to show, you know, that sometimes how I feel, you know, working for them, sometimes not always the best way, especially for us, you know, in order to get justice on these jobs and to be treated right and be fairly, you know, we may have to do our own thing. Not may have to, we got to do our own thing, get our own jobs and companies, and employ our own. So, but I will post some video.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Right on. Marcus, do you have anything you wanted to get in before we wrap things up?
Also, just, you know, really encouraged by the whole conversation, you as a moderator. Really appreciate being able to participate in the discussion here, to share my issues I'm having with Recology, but also to I'm calling Recology out. I want to call them out. I want them to stand up and address this issues. I want them to address them publicly. I do believe that there's a policy in force, and that the company's large enough, if I'm not mistaken, and I didn't fact check, you know, on this. I do think we are the largest subcontractor doing business with the city and county of San Francisco, as well as many other cities along the West Coast. So I do believe that this is just not Jared's issue or myself's issues. This is Black employees of Recology's issues. It's the Mexican employees of Recology's issues and white employees of Recology's issues. This is a human issue here, and it needs to be addressed in a proper way. And I want to thank you for allowing me to express and share my experiences. Thank you.
Pleasure to have both of you with us on the program. I know I said this repeatedly. This is one of the more important issues with regards to racism, white supremacy. What happens on these jobs? Because it's so many people that are working and going through the same thing. So I think it's something we should be talking about regularly. I hope it's been constructive, and we will do the update because it seems like there's more that will be added to this narrative. So we'll look forward to having Mr. Washington back with us. Hopefully Marcus can participate as well, and just wish
pleasure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just wish you all the best in continuing to stay the course and working for justice in this issue. I hope it is resolved to the both of your utmost satisfaction. And like I said, you definitely have an invitation to come back. Anything that we can do to help promote what you all are doing, draw attention, and just for us, so that we know what's going on with the case. Definitely, we want to keep our eyes on it. And again, make sure I get my gratitude out. sfbayview.com, Black journalists, outstanding material, and keeping your story in the news, so that we know what's happening with you down there. And Final Call as well. It wasn't just SF Bayview. Final Call also had some great material as well. Just appreciate that. And again, the importance of Black journalists to get this information out, because I don't think you're going to see this on CNN, at least not yet.
No.
It has been grand. Definitely enjoy the rest, both of you, enjoy the rest of your Sunday evening, and keep us posted. I'm sure Bay Area, if you give us the update, we'll update for the rally that you all have that's going to be later this month, the 21st, you said. And then if you, anything you share, any footage, interviews, audio that you capture when you are down in the nation's capital later this year, let us know. We'll post, we'll share, and wish you safe travels, Mr. Washington.
Thank you, Gus, and I appreciate it. And keep doing what you're doing, brother. I appreciate you.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Thank you. Have a fantastic Sunday evening, and we will speak soon, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
For sure.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Marcus.
Thank you.
Context of white supremacy. Man, workplace racism. I keep saying that's one of the most important things. We should be talking about that regularly, just paying attention every week when I check the news, or just go over in different reports that people send me and stuff. Every week is the same type of thing. White people making some sort of tacky racist jokes on the job or putting up some kind of photos. And a lot of it is degrading. It's not even just a person that's not there. It's making tacky jokes and degrading and humiliating other Black people that are right there. That this is just going on constantly. This is one of those things that definitely we should prepare for and talk to your children about things that you see on your job, how you're dealing with it. That is super important because there's so many people, Black people that we've had on the program down through the years. We'll talk to them and they'll say the same thing, that they weren't prepared. They hadn't, you know, their parents hadn't talked to them about how you deal with racism, period, much less on the job. They really didn't have a mentor who came in, gave them details, things to watch out for, things to do, things not to do, taking notes, that sort of thing, that they just didn't have any of that information. So they really got blindsided. And I'm in that boat, too. I mean, I was not given any of that information. I mean, it's just sending lambs to the slaughter when you have Black people who just don't understand what racism is, how it works, and that the problem is white people. You get on these jobs and just get blasted. I mean, it can be really bad. So I hope people understand the magnitude of this. If you don't have these issues with racism on your job, make sure you invest in the cows, racism-notes.blogspot.com, racism-notes.blogspot.com. Listener supported counter racist radio. PayPal button is in the top right corner. If you're not in the PayPal, drop me an email and we can get you a physical mailing address. Thanks to all the folks who have invested and for, again, all the people. You're not having any problem on the job. White people are doing right by you. You get your bonuses, you get your raises, you get your promotions. You don't get any write-ups. You do your you are just propping your feet up and counting your days until retirement. Well, hey, make sure you invest. Let us know how you have pulled that off. That would be grand. With that, we will be back 48 hours. We'll be back. Our guest, Black female, she did the segment that was in the Washington Post like a week ago, maybe 10 days ago, about her tragic arrangement, a white person that I guess she didn't think was racist. And then, lo and behold, it turned out that they were racist. We did have a few fair watches. The advise, watch the word fair. I say that consistently. We did have a few fairs during the program. Hopefully we can codify and get better about that as well. Any other folks that had a hand up who dialed in, you all have anything you wanted to get in before we wrap things up? Or is everybody content?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I just wanted to know, Gus, did you get my emails that I sent you?
The Daniel Holtzclaw trial coming up next month, and then there might have been some other suspected race soldiers who might have been, or it's not might, they were engaged. They've been accused of sexual misconduct, perhaps while they were on the job. You were just asking if whether or not the victims were also Black, because I think some of those officers were also in Oklahoma, just like Daniel Holtzclaw. That was the information?
Yeah, both of them were. Right. Both of them were also Oklahoma police. I was just curious if you had heard anything or if you knew if they were Black victims in those cases as well.
I had not heard about those cases, and I don't know if the victims are Black. That's one I would have to dig. We do have listeners in Oklahoma, so we can poke around a little bit and maybe see if they've heard any more details. But yeah, I have no idea if the victims in those instances are, if they're Black.
Yeah, because I was just curious because I hadn't heard about those cases until I tried to, you know, remind myself of when it holds. I knew it was coming up. So I just looked it up, and then I found those other cases. Then I said, you know, it's funny how the white feminists aren't all down in Oklahoma. I mean, you have three cops convicted of raping people. I mean, it just seems like something that they would take up. And also, did you get the email I sent you about the Walter Scott video?
I did. That was a little earlier in the week where now they're trying to say that he had cocaine in his system and they had, I guess, some digitally enhanced footage that he, you know, he did take his taser and slipped in a judo chop. So, of course, you know, he had to shoot him 10 times in the back.
Yeah, right? Shoot him 8 times in the back. Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thanks for taking my call again. Thanks.
For sure. Yes, sir.
Yes,
this is a very, very difficult task that I'm going to ask you. I'm going to put it in a question. What is your thoughts on the possibility of asking Minister Farrakhan to come on your program before October?
I would be down. I wouldn't have beef about it. I think it has their contact information. I think I had called them before about having him on the program, and they just gave me like a fax number where they said to write out the request. But I don't think that would be that challenging at this point. If that's all it would take is a fax, and then they decide whether or not he wants to do it or not. But, yeah, that doesn't sound too difficult.
Yeah. Not so much about from a religious standpoint, but from the standpoint of what's going to be happening in Washington, D.C., and not so much even about that particular event, but the subject matter of racism, white supremacy, and combination with his event that's in October. Of course, the two are related. it'll be an interesting program, that's for sure.
We will see if we can do that. I know he's probably getting deluged with requests for interviews, but I will. I will definitely see if we can make a submission. Maybe he can come hang out for a few minutes and give us the deal, give us the what for. That shouldn't be too difficult to write a letter of request to see if he'll come hang out.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Greetings, Gus. I got a quick question. Great show tonight, by the way.
Appreciate.
Yeah, I've been looking through the archives. The CALF came into existence after 9/11, but are there any shows related to that? I can't seem to find, or did you address that topic in relation to racism at all? Because I can't seem to find anything in the archives on that.
Let me think. Have we done programs on specifically on 9/11? Nothing is jumping out off the top of my head.
Okay. In the interest of time, if something pops up, just drop it on Facebook and I'll take a look at it, okay?
That'll work. That's reasonable. Yeah, I have to think about it.
Well, thank you. Good night, and I'll mute myself, and we'll go on from there. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate the question. Yeah, I'll have to think on that if we've done specifically on 9/11, if we've done something. I'll ponder. Oops, did I miss somebody have a question? Miss somebody? Okay, they were just chatting. Yeah, I have to ponder on that. I will. I think I've said before, 9/11 was not one of those events that I got sucked into because I was not in front of the television on that day, so I don't have all those images of standing in front of the television and being stunned or shocked or surprised or anything, really, if I was there and questioning because I just wasn't there. I had to work that day. They did not close. I had to go to court that day to testify for my job, and they didn't close any of that, so I just don't have the same attachment to all of that because I was occupied for quite a bit of that. That week, and then once I got more informed about racism, that changed things too. So, but that's definitely an event that we should cover and talk. I know we did talk with Cynthia McKinney about that. I don't know if we've done a whole program, but I know aspects of that have definitely popped up down through the years. I know Cynthia McKinney had a lot to say about things that happened there and the investigation, and we talked with her, I believe the second time that she was on the program. We talked with her and a lot of the backlash that she got for things that she said, questions that she asked, and being suspicious about a lot of the narratives that were being given to us about what happened on 9/11. With that, anybody else have a question? Anything else they wanted to make sure they got in?
Did you see Japan's response to the typhoon as opposed to Katrina? I kind of brought it up yesterday on the show. I just wasn't sure if anyone else had seen the footage of that.
I remember you bringing that up on the program yesterday. I hadn't seen the footage that you were talking about, but yeah, I remember you bringing that up yesterday about the massive difference in them expeditiously dealing with that situation.
Speaking of 9/11,
just briefly, I recall that morning I was actually on duty, and what I normally do, we clean up the station at first. That's the first thing you do, and my job was to clean the floor where the televisions were at, and I normally turn on TV to look at the news while I'm cleaning up. When I turned on television, I saw a tall building burning, and I knew from my experience as a fireman that that wasn't by accident. Within an hour and a half, I was gone from that job. I told him I had to go home. I'm sick. Yeah, because I was not going to be in a uniform if something really spread it around this part of the world on a massive level. I was not going to be in that uniform that day, so I left from work.
Smart move. Smart move. That is definitely one thing I would say. Anything like that, where it's obviously going to be a military situation that white people, even if it looks like something that'll just be an excuse, this will be a pretext for white people to say, oh, we got to make this a military situation and bring in lots of armed white brutes to come in and lock down a situation, anything like that. It's definitely one of those where you want to kind of catch that as early as possible and make whatever decision you think would be the best codified thing for you to do to keep yourself safe, people that you care about, children, family, man, because those type incidents, like, my goodness, I think Thomas in New York was talking about that, not yesterday, but earlier, about some of the things that happened with 9/11 and not being able to get into the city or being restricted and that sort of thing. Like, they can make it very difficult immediately once they have said, oh, state of emergency, we got to lock everything down.
To show you the power of racism and white supremacy, within 24 hours, not an aircraft that was allowed to be in the air was in the air. With less than 24 hours, shut it down.
Other folks have comments here? Did I miss unless somebody else had a comment? I will assume folks are satisfied. I reckon I have homework. See if I can get my request letter together. Get that faxed off for Minister Farrakhan. At least ask and hope for the best. I'll see if we have any 9/11 programs, or even if it didn't take up the whole program, where we focused on that to some degree and how that relates to white supremacy. And then... oh boy, I feel like I had other things to do. I'm sure it'll come to mind. That book, 5 Days at Memorial, the auxiliary book. Still encouraging people to read it. It is it is incredible. There's so much that relates to racism, white supremacy in the book. I'm saying I'm surprised just because I had heard the author talk before, who is a white female. And she did not say all of this about racism. It was just kind of an overview of the case and dealing well with the forensic evidence. And they even brought in one of the doctors who worked with the coroner in this case, who examined some of the bodies. It was really more dealing with that and trying to get at, did the evidence suggest that these doctors, for people who've heard me talk about this book before, the doctors, it looks like the evidence suggests that they injected patients that they said weren't going to live, or they weren't going to survive, or they weren't going to be able to be evacuated, that they injected these patients with drugs, gave them a lethal injection that killed them. And that's what they were looking at, the forensic evidence, to see if it suggested that or not. That was what she talked about when she did her presentation on Book TV. The book, which is about 1,000 pages, just racism, racism, racism. It is, in my opinion, it might be the dominant theme in the book, particularly because she doesn't, in my opinion, she doesn't do the best job at cleanly making sure you know the racial classification of everybody involved and then the demographics of who's at the hospital. It might even be more dominant. But even without all of that, it is Woo, it is amazing. They bring up the Duke rape case. I mean, it is just amazing. For folks who remember, it was the lacrosse team. They were accused of having sexually assaulted, raped this black female. I think this was like 2006, 2005, 2006 that this happened. White people were outraged. They were mad at the attorney. They ended up disbarring him. That's the way that they compare the doctors and nurses who were they were arrested, and then they went to the grand jury, and even though they chose not to indict them, but at least they were arrested, and they were going to look into prosecuting them. That's the way that they talked about the attorneys who did this, that they compared them to the attorney in the Duke lacrosse case. It is amazing. For any of the folks who've heard me talking about it over the past few weeks, if you want to read it, that's great. Our original schedule for the Auxiliary Book Club was that we were going to read 200 pages a week. I will finish the book today. I think I have like 20 pages. I'll be done today. I can obviously still talk about it because I read it, I highlighted it, I took notes, so I can still participate. I have a form started on thecodeconnection.org. You can just go there. You can see it. I think I posted the article or the site where you all can go check it out if you want to see some of the notes from the book, where I tried to get some of the juicier tidbits that I thought people would want to check out. But the people that are still reading, if you post and add to the forum, I will participate. That was the whole point of doing this. I wanted to have a group of people that were reading it seriously, taking notes and evaluating what they read. So if you want to participate, feel free to join in. But moving forward, and I say that because I'm moving forward to pick another book. This book was, I think this might be the longest book that I've read at 1,000 pages. But there are now other books that I would like to read that are also related to Katrina. We're doing the book club this Friday, Katrina After the Flood, Gary Riblin. I'm hoping this will allow me to be more informed about an incident that I think is very important, that we should know as much as possible in terms of what happened, the aftermath, all of the above, and even before. I think I mentioned 5 books. Now that one's down, so out of that same set, 4 remaining. Wendell Pierce I'm pushing to the side just because that's small enough that I think we could do that on the book club at some point, and I think listeners might want to hear that, so I'm kind of pushing that to the side. The remaining books are all very long, too long that we could not do any of them for the book club because I think they're all at least 1,000 pages. Some of them are significantly longer than that. The three books, Zaytoon, one of our listeners is reading that. They'll have to tell me if they can excite me to read it. I might read it, but I got a little bit disenchanted because I thought it was a non-white person, which it may be. But the photograph to me looks like someone who would be accepted as white. You all can check that out on your own. That is interesting, but I have to get more details. The two remaining books, one of them is Rising Tide and the other one is The Deluge. Rising Tide, for all the people who think that the levees was bombed, you should probably read that book. In fact, Minister Farrakhan recommended that you read that book. It was written by a white man, Rising Tide. It is not about Hurricane Katrina. It was published 10 years prior to. It's about the 1927 flood. The Mississippi River was at like historic flood level. I think it was just massive flood. I think there was flooding all the way from Missouri to Pennsylvania, where they had massive flood. It was an incredible event. Attached to all of this, New Orleans at the bottom of the Mississippi River, they were concerned, white people were, they decided that they were going to blow the levees purposely in New Orleans. They did not have to do this, according to the evidence John Berry presents. They didn't have to do this. This was not something that they did this so that white property wouldn't flood. They just did this to be gangster. That's in his book. And more importantly even than that, although that is significant, that's not something that should be just tossed away. They have this flood. The Mississippi River had been at a very high flood level for, I think, months, a long, long time. It was at historic flood levels. They knew this was going to be a problem. Evacuation, same thing with Katrina. They have evacuation. They see it's going to flood. Let's go ahead and try and evacuate people. In Mississippi, the white people say, wait a minute. If we allow black people to evacuate, we might lose our Negroes. They decide we are not going to allow the black people to evacuate. They put them in concentration camps and force them to clean up after the flood. that is in Rising Tide. I think that is equally important, maybe even more important than the other information about the flooding and the detonation. But that is Rising Tide. That is a huge book. I've heard the author many times. He's in When the Levees Broke. Huge book. They had him back on because I think that book was published 10 years before Hurricane Katrina. So they had him come back on and talk once it happened. He was giving his comparison contrast. Huge book, but it is about 1,400 pages. Now, the other book is The Deluge. That is by Douglas Brinkley. That is also a white person. That book is just about the first 5 days of the storm. It hits, and then everything that transpired that first week. That's all it's about. That book is also about 1,500 pages. I'm probably going to pick one of those two books to start reading tomorrow. If there are people who want to read, fine. I thought that it would take a lot longer to read these books, but apparently that is not the case. So if you think you can read this book in 3 weeks, maybe, feel free. Sign up. Love to have other folks to read and take notes as we roll. I was thinking I was going to do Rising Tide to read that one first. But it would seem if we're doing Katrina and all that and trying to add to the discussion, make sure we have great information, might be better to read The Deluge first, because that's just with the first 5 days of Katrina. Our book is going to move away from that quickly because most of the book is not about those first 5 days. Most of it is about the 10 years after. So I don't know. I'm trying to decide. I'm being indecisive. If you have a vote or care for people that are serious that might actually read one of those two books, if you have a preference, let me know. But those are probably auxiliary book. This is not on the program. This is just extra to get more information about what happened and just the history of that area since Katrina has been on people's minds. Rising Tide, John Barry, or The Deluge, Douglas Brinkley. Either one, if you have a preference, let me know. But they are very chunky books, very, very big, should be informative. That's it for folks. We'll be back in 2 days. If you have problems, complaints, you can't find something in the archives, suggestions, feel free. Let me know. Email untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @untiljustice. You can Facebook message or whatever the case may be. The archives, iTunes, Stitcher, tune in. You can hear the archives or you can hear the live content. If you get confused, just drop me a line. I want to thank Mr. Washington again for visiting with us. Great to have him back on the program. His co-worker, Marcus, for sharing with us as well. Hope you all got some constructive information. Workplace racism, huge, huge problem. With that, thanks again. Great hearing from everyone, and we'll be back in 24 hours. I would encourage again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. We do have enemies, and they do love to make problems for black people. Definitely don't want to drink if you or be intoxicated if you got to drive. I would even encourage, be cautious about getting in the vehicle intoxicated if you're even going to be a passenger, even if you're going to be a pedestrian, because racists, they are on their job to just molest and harass black people. Everything that you can do to make sure that you're clear thinking, lucid, you can make the best decisions. That's what we want to be about. That's what we want to promote. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.